Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, it's getting hot here. Boy, you think it was summertime. Here we are on the Gulf Coast of Florida in the Panhandle here, not too far from Pensacola, the home of the Blue Angels. And it's hot. You know, I want to go bike riding yesterday, and it's hot. It's like 90 degrees. It's 5 o'clock. I was like, ugh. Anyway, I'm going to go hit the gym after the show today and get in the air-conditioned splendor and work out like crazy and do all those wonderful things. So, yeah, getting healthier, losing weight, doing all the things I'm supposed to do to take care of me now that I've taken care of pretty much the show. So we have a lot going on today. We've got Shelby Frenette coming in just a little bit here with the Cruise and Travel Report, and I also want to hear the Love Boat update. We're going to have a substitution. Her son's going to be joining us either starting this week. I'm not sure. We'll find out in a minute. Starting this week or starting next week, and we're going to talk history with Christian Frenette, so that's going to be a whole bunch of fun too. Josie Costi is going to be with us at the bottom of the first hour, and then we have Dr. Peter Pry at top of the next hour, and then a special guest today is Cheryl Todd. And Cheryl Todd is the chair of the DC Project. That's the same organization that Shirley Watchell's in. She's chair in Florida, and Cheryl is chair in Arizona. We got a lot of folks in the show from Arizona, so it's a real it's very fertile ground for patriots. And so it's part of the reason I changed the hours of the show from 6 in the morning starts to 7, because a lot of our folks come from the West. And so because of that, you know, it just made more sense. I don't know what's going on the East Coast, but the only folks that join us really from the East Coast are those from the D.C. area. And that's because that's where the capital happens to be. And so we have Dr. Peter Pry joining us from there. So as soon as we get Shelby, we'll get to her. But in the meantime, we've got so much going on. I had a big press release I released yesterday to all kinds of folks in media, legislators, you know, members of Congress, state legislators, the governor's office here in Florida, all the folks that are on my rather voluminous list of conservative activists, conservative groups, all kinds of folks to bolster the arguments against all this unconstitutional gun rights control is what I call it. So there's no such thing as gun control. Gun control is when you handle a gun safely and properly. And use it properly. That's gun control, because you are controlling the gun. Gun rights control, that's what the left does. And so once you make the distinction between gun control and gun rights control, which is controlling people, then you understand what's happening. And my basic contention is that all gun rights control is automatically unconstitutional. It's automatically unconstitutional, you know, before it's written, while it's still being thought about. But as soon as it's written, it's automatically unconstitutional. When it's passed, it's automatically unconstitutional, because anything that touches your right to keep and bear arms, to own and carry firearms of your choice, to own the firearms of your choice, and to carry them at the method that you choose, so that they're instantly available for self-defense, that's on you. that's your right. But I made really clear in this press release that uses of firearms are not rights. You know, the Second Amendment doesn't say you have a right to use a firearm, because that would imply that all uses are legal and covered by the right, because all rights are absolute. Well, that's why they couldn't say uses, because all uses are not legal. In fact, the government makes very clear distinctions, and should. That's their job, is to decide between legal and illegal uses of firearms, and it's our job to decide whether we want to keep that government in terms of elections and things like that. And so that's how it works. You know, it's pretty straightforward that the laws are there to determine legal versus illegal uses. Legal, you know, self-defense, target shooting, collecting, gunsmithing, you know, retail sales, things like that. Illegal, brandishing, murder, extortion, carjacking, you know, bank robbery, things like that. So there's a very clear distinction between legal and illegal uses of firearms. It's not that hard to figure out. Let's get Pianki, who's on the line now. I think he might have even got my press release from yesterday too. Pianki, did you get a chance to check out my press release?
Is this Greg Penglis?
I think so. Yeah, it's me.
Great. Okay, crew, Pitch Kitch right here. We found him.
What do you mean you found me? Where was I missing?
We've traveled over 3,000 miles through space to get here. We've heard your radio transmission and are further interested in what you have to say.
I've got an alien on the line. Great. Well, actually, that would be interesting. So it's the one thing I haven't interviewed is an alien. So, I mean, go ahead. You know, which, pray tell, what planet?
Wait a minute. I think you have this. From the appearance, there's plenty that we can choose from.
Yeah,
starting
most of them
with Adam Schiff.
The Democrat Party, though. That's the problem. They're all the Democrat Party.
You might have a Republican or two.
Well, that's true, yeah. Well, those aren't Republicans. Those are transgender Democrats. So anyway, just to let folks know, Pianki gets my press releases because he's my co-host now. So you call him as often as Pianki, and you get to be co-host. So did you get a chance to take a look? Do you like my arguments? I mean, these are, I think, rhetorical questions, but, you know, it's just I want to get these things out there because the geldings don't seem to be able to come up with, you know, really strong enough arguments. You know, they always say the same thing. Well, the Second Amendment says you can't do that. People go, well, we don't care about your Second Amendment. Well, it's not my Second Amendment. It's all ours, you know. And but I just want to, as I was talking about just a couple of minutes ago, gun rights control comes under statutory law, which is subservient, subordinate, and below the Constitution, and rights are, of course, above it. So that's why law cannot control rights. And I think that's something that's missing from the argument. They never seem to get that.
Well, you're absolutely right. The foundations were set with the creation and the approval of the people at that time of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
The Constitution rights are exclusive. They are, I can't think of the word that I've heard used to describe them, but they're it. They're the man.
Well, no, the Constitution, you know, is supreme. It's the supreme law of the land. And so the idea that you can make laws that will govern the supreme law of the land is insane. It's irrational. You know, it's because they're down the scale. They're weaker. That's like saying your local government can order Congress, you know, what to do. Doesn't work that way. All right, looks like we got Shelby here. So let me get to her. She's busy. She's so busy. She's going to be the next Love Boat cruise director on TV. And so we have to make a little announcement here. Let me get Shelby's theme. We'll get onto that. I'm scrolling here. Can you tell? I'm vamping. And there we go. We'll be right back.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places. Wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Frenette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
Okay, I'm ready to get out of here. I've had enough of this place. It's hot. I want an air-conditioned cruise ship. I want to sail the ocean. I want to get away. Good morning, Shelby.
Well, how's it going, Greg? You need to get away?
Well, we've talked about this before. I want to do Action Radio on a cruise ship for a week. Now, I don't know how we're going to do that, but it's like expensive. I know there's satellite charges and all that kind of stuff. I don't care. I want to find a way to do Action Radio on the water.
I bet as long as you have Wi-Fi, it's not that expensive. They have streaming devices. Yeah, it's really not that outrageous these days.
Okay.
But yeah, we can. Anytime you want to get a group together, you let me know. I know they're still doing the unvaxxed option on the one ship that's a two-nighter out of Palm Beach. All the other big ships have the option of only vaccine. So you probably want to.
That's not an option.
Yeah,
that's the only option. On. So, yeah, 2-day cruise actually might be. Is it over a weekend or is it during the week or are they rotated?
Yeah, it can
or how
be.
Do that?
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. They have some on the weekends and some during the week. Yep. They have a couple nights. You can always choose to stay a couple days in the Bahamas at one of their all-inclusive resorts as well.
Ooh, now we're talking. All right. We're going to work on this here. Got to get the show a little bigger, a few more sponsors, but we are growing by leaps and bounds. Mama B on Mondays and our World's Greatest Doctor panel on Thursdays. Yeah, the show is just taking off. So we're going to, if you aren't a household word already, you know, of course you will be with Love Boat, but Action Radio 2 is going to be huge, as we all predicted. It's just a question of when. So Love Boat, what's going on?
Well, the Love Boat is going good. We're still waiting. It's been a roller coaster ride. So, you know, I had my three interviews and a Zoom interview where they took clips of them asking me certain questions, and they asked me for all kinds of pictures of my background and videos. And they were creating a glossy package to present to the network, which means, I guess, a little background story. And they're all very complimentary. In fact, the first gal that interviewed me, who chose to interview me, she's from Boynton Beach, which is right around the corner. That's pretty cool. Anyway, then, you know, we don't know for sure, of course, we're still waiting, but then we heard that they were filming on the Regal Princess already. So I was all up, like, up in arms, like, oh, no, you know, did I not get it? But turns out that they're filming the Australian version, so we're still in the game. And all the information we're putting on our Facebook group, The Real Love Boat, you can always find me on Shelby Frenette or ShelbyLive.com. You can just message me and I'll get you in the group. But all the inside scoop, we've got some guests on the Regal Prince that had gotten some notices that they were filming. We have some crew that are on the Regal Princess from back in the day that we're still friends with that were letting us know that it's getting hot and heavy. So it's pretty exciting, and we should know really, you know, I think any day now we should hear that hopefully I get the part. But
well, of course. I was thinking
it's been a great journey.
Oh, yeah, I got a question. Well, I'm curious about the process, too. But so this is a reality show, so they're not looking for Hollywood actors, because the first Love Boat, those were actors. You know, they were not cruise ship people.
Right.
You know, you're a cruise director.
Yeah.
You actually do the job. But they're looking for just regular folks. Okay, go ahead. Tell me. I'm curious.
Yeah. In fact, one of the questions that they asked me was what other shows I've been a part of. And I said, you know, none. And they were like,
which is
oh,
true.
That's great. And I said,
yeah.
I said, oh, that's,
that may
that's
be an advantage.
A good thing. I would have thought.
No, it actually may be an advantage, you know, because then they'll get you naturally as opposed to acting. You're trying to be something else. You know, but a reality show that you want to be yourself. So I would put that as a strength. You know, that you haven't been corrupted by other shows.
And,
you know. Yeah. Go ahead.
And they also mentioned that they're not looking to do the same old drama. They really do want people to fall in love and the cruise director to act as sort of a matchmaker. So when they asked me about my matchmaking, and I said, you know, I like to think of myself as a cruise director connector. Like, I just like create the environment.
Well, that's so good.
I'm there to lean on. I don't like to, the word matchmaking to me is so forceful, like as if you're putting people together on a date. Like, I don't like that idea.
Yeah.
But just creating that environment for real sparks, real magic to happen, because that's my job. And yeah, it is really exciting. We'll see what happens in the next couple days, but the group is growing by leaps and bounds, and you know, we're super excited. I got some nautical wear. I got more nautical wear, I should say.
Oh, my. How much?
Yeah,
do you have like
I
a whole
like,
closet
of
cruise ship
spirit.
Clothes? I just
yes,
see you like,
I
two,
really
Shelby
do.
Has two closets, folks, okay? One for land, one for sea. She's got two different sets of wardrobe.
Oh, it's like, I really have always been a fashionista. I do like to look the part. So that's been really fun. Yeah, so we're, you know, just rocking and rolling with that. And then we have our Richard Branson cruise is going really well, too. Richard Branson is going to be aboard the Virgin Voyages on July 17th. And we have a group of singles sailing on that. You know, that is a vaccinated only cruise, but it's definitely it's an exciting opportunity for people to meet someone that, you know, a lot of us really look up to for some reason or another. And
well, Branson's a character. In fact, any of the great entrepreneurs, you know, even Ted Turner, who I respect for starting CNN, I don't like where they've gone, but I respect him because he started something, you know, and Turner Classic Movies and then all these really, you know, Elon Musk, the people that create things, the people that build things, especially if they didn't have a huge, you know, trust fund baby start to be able to do the things they do. They're all characters. They're all risk takers. They're all fascinating people to be able to do the things they do. And so it's this is why I say it's quite interesting. I'm just curious why Branson picked Virgin for everything that he does. Virgin Cruises. You know, they should call it Virgin Cruises for now. I mean, you can have some fun with this. But it's just sorry, I had to drop that in. But just the idea of you know, it's a really catchy name. You know, and so it's very okay. You know, I mean, I'd be curious the origin of that. That's the sort of stuff.
I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to find out because I'll definitely be asking. I'll definitely hopefully be getting his ear at some point.
Get him on the show.
I
want to hear his story. I'm serious. I'd love to hear his story. And he might like what we do. He might love citizen legislation. Who knows? You know, talk about that later. Not during Love Boat stuff, but you know, you never know.
Well, I'm not sure my ties run quite that deep. Maybe when I get on TV, I'll have a little more pull, but
I'll wait. I can wait.
He's definitely a real innovator. He kind of changed my mind about what entrepreneurship really is. I think he's the kind of entrepreneur that is unlike, I feel like we've sort of termed entrepreneur as like a go-getter. And I really don't believe that that's the right definition.
How would you define it? I'm curious.
He's a total risk taker. You said it first. People often say I'm so entrepreneurial, and since I've had my own business and run my own game, I would say no, I am absolutely not entrepreneurial because I'm so risk averse. I don't enjoy risk. I much enjoy leading a team, but I don't enjoy innovation like that and creation at that risk level, at that base level. I find that so stressful. I do not enjoy that process. So you are probably a real entrepreneur in my definition. I think people these days use the word way too generally, and anybody that does anything that's successful is like an entrepreneur. And it's like, no, an entrepreneur is really a special character that is not risk averse and truly the cup is half full. And again, I would relate that to you. So yeah, I think you're under the Richard Branson brand. I am not. People often will be like, Shelby, you're such a great entrepreneur. In fact, I've been interviewing for some positions lately. And one of the biggest problems I have is that we have a successful company and I own it. And so they are all so scared that I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, I didn't mean to be an entrepreneur. I just got forced into this because of COVID.
Well, no, it's a good thing though. I got the definition right here. It's my online dictionary says a person who organizes and operates a business or businesses, taking on a greater than normal financial risk in order to do so. Well, most of the good entrepreneurs go broke. That would include me. You know, it's just part of the process. You know, Hershey went broke 3 times. Ford, you know, lost 3 factories. You know, Edison, I'm sure, was broke a couple times too. So it is, I guess, where you're taking this further. So if you take the literal definition, people who start businesses on their own, that makes you entrepreneurial. I think people like the sound of it because I think it sounds French. It's probably where it came from originally. Mid-18th century, from French. Okay, there we go. Entreprendre, undertake. So basically it means to start something. Now, what you're talking about is like the entrepreneur's entrepreneur, you know, the real risk taker, the person but you have to have a lot to risk. You know, I mean, my risking everything financially is not Richard Branson's risking everything financially. He's got billions of dollars.
But it was at one point for him. I mean, he started, you know, his first big loss. What I think is so remarkable about him and his stories, I think I feel like I know about, you know, 30 or 40% deep about his background. I don't know it all, but a couple of stories that I find fascinating about him is that his first real loss was Virgin Records because it was very successful, but they didn't do their taxes. So the tax companies came and basically put them under, but he didn't stop. He just kept going, you know, with his contacts. Yeah. And then he also had, of course, Virgin Air, and, you know, Virgin Air was a big deal because Virgin Atlantic, I mean to say, which was the airline. And I thought one of the most interesting parts about him is guerrilla marketing. So he found an area where he thought could be improved, and the reason he found it could be improved was he was trying to get to Puerto Rico. On the last flight, he was dating this lady there, and he really wanted to see her, and they didn't have enough people on the plane.
So he started
the
company?
This is an interesting story. So they stopped the flight. They canceled the flight because there wasn't enough people, and he, back then, it was like, I think in the 80s or early 90s, and he said back then you could go and charter a flight right there at the ticket counter, and so he asked what it would cost, and he did out the math, and he went right back there and he got a big chalkboard and he said, you know, this much a ticket to get you to, because I want to see that girl, to get you to Puerto Rico. So So he just chartered a plane right then and there. A couple hours later, they were on a flight to Puerto Rico and he had sold the tickets on a blackboard that he had pulled in. And when he discovered that he wanted to do an airline, and, you know, to me, that's insane. Like, and then of course the airlines didn't like the fact that he was giving good service and trying to do things differently and getting some notoriety.
Oh, so I know what that's about.
Right. So they tried to blackball
him. Love me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I know all about black being blackballed, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, so do I.
So I can relate to that. but, yeah, so he was being blackballed, and he couldn't afford any national exposure. So he went onto the Super Bowl, and he rented a blimp, and one of these I don't know what they're filled with today, but, you know, one of these blimps that go
helium.
Around the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're helium.
Helium still?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, hydrogen
anyway.
Was the Hindenburg. That didn't work out well.
Okay, gotcha. That's what happened. All right. So regardless, he rented a blimp, and he put on it something to the effect of, on one side, he put NBC newscasters are always, and something to make the NBC newscasters film while at the Super Bowl the blimp going over the live Super Bowl, because when they pulled it back, it was another tongue-in-cheek thing, you know, something about their erections, actually, I think it was,
well,
getting hard,
like a blimp,
something.
Gee, talk about symbolism.
But anyway, but it was for Virgin Atlantic. It's so Virgin, because they thought through it all so well that they would get the actual cameraman to be interested in what they have on the blimp. So they mm-hmm. wrote for the cameraman, but the Virgin Atlantic emblem and sponsorship was also on there. And that was one of the ways that they got, you know, their guerrilla marketing tactics and were seen by the Super Bowl and did not pay a cent. Well, didn't pay to be seen anyway. So I thought that was so brilliant. I'm like, that is just like the kind of thing that you just can't make up. And boy, what balls to get all that off the ground.
Oh, yeah. So and, you have a slogan, you know, don't be blimp, you know, sail Virgin Atlantic. I mean, you can have all kinds of fun with these things.
Oh,
but,
yeah. He's very clever, too.
Well, companies,
so, anyway,
companies have no sense of humor.
He's gonna be on board.
They don't. Companies have no sense of humor. They don't. The woke companies are the worst of all. You know, and when someone comes along with a genius like that and actually has the balls, as you say, to carry out the crazy things. You know, people think about doing crazy things, but they never actually do them. But a few
right.
of us, you know, I've done a few crazy things too. We had a banner behind an airplane in college, you know, talking about our opposition, which is kind of fun. We just, you know, asked for a dollar from everybody, and we hired a plane to fly a banner. You know, UMass is the best in the land, and we flew it right over Harvard Stadium. You know, just to tweak the nose of the Ivy League people. So, I mean, it's fun. I love fun stuff like that. So, you know, Branson does it on a much bigger scale. But he's creative, and you have to admire people like that. You know, whether you agree with everything they do or not, which is nobody agrees with everything, but just the idea of getting out there and taking the risk. Most people are terrified of risk. You know, I think of risk as a necessary part of where I want to get to. So, in other words, Action Radio would never happen without risk. In my case, you know, like I say, for anybody, you know, pretty much everything, because the radio business does not want Action Radio, because it's different, because it's new ideas. It means they'd have to change. So I'm forcing them eventually in a position where they're either going to have to change to what we do here at Action Radio, or they're going to die. I mean, talk radio is not going to survive though in its present form. It just can't. There's no innovation. There's no interaction. The kids don't like it. So I'm at the right place at the right time with the right idea, but they still don't want it. There's huge resistance, and there's resistance to anything that comes in. I'm sure there was resistance to electric vehicles, you know, and then of course the government came along and gave them huge tax subsidies. So that's unfair. That's a bad way to do it, because now you're not doing it properly in the market. But I know there's resistance by British Airways to Branson, because they wanted to be the government sanctioned airline, and that was it, right? Well, do you know more? You probably know more about that story, I'm sure. What happened with that?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, that's basically what happened. They did win. They won. He had to sell out. But right now, Branson, he's a figurehead for the company. It's really not Virgin. I don't even think Virgin is his company anymore. It's all managed by investors. I'm sorry, I have to get off quickly today because I have an engagement to get to. But I did want to mention that I did launch my podcast, Cruise Director. It's called Cruise Director. And I just launched it. And, you know, some of it is because of you, because of your podcast. So I want to say thank you for, you know, inspiring me. And
we're
going to be talking about all the Love Boat and in more detail about the process and of course, all the crazy stories of what I've been through over my 500 sailings and all the single sailings that I've hosted. So if anyone is interested in a little lightheartedness, Cruise Director is the next new big podcast coming out.
Yep. What happens on the cruise stays on the podcast.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. Have a fabulous day. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye-bye.
Bye, Shelby. Thank you very much. And yeah, you can find that. We have a cruise and travel group at Action Radio, and Shelby kind of runs that. And I post a lot of her stuff there, but she's getting really busy with other stuff. So I'm glad to inspire her. I mean, I think that's wonderful. So yay. So now that we have this, and I got Pianki still on here too. Now that I got 5 minutes, I'm going to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, Founding Moments. We've got a new one on Federalist 12, and I want to get this in because the whole show is packed today. We've got Josie joining us in about 5 minutes. We've got Dr. Peter Pry at 8 o'clock Central Time, and Cheryl Todd, our special guest today, who runs Gun Freedom Radio. So that's where we started talking guns this morning. We're going to keep doing that in the later part. So let me get this in right now, and I'll be back after our presentation. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Even the title of Federalist Number 12 is bad. The utility of the Union in respect to revenue. First of all, the Union was not created for Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist Number 12, to rule it. Nor was the Union created for his utility, nor for the Union to generate revenue. Hamilton says, "The prosperity of commerce is now perceived and acknowledged by all enlightened statesmen to be the most useful as well as the most productive source of national wealth, and has accordingly become a primary object of their political cares." Such grand assumptions. All enlightened statesmen? So those who disagree must be stupid by comparison. Commerce is supposed to bring wealth. That's why we engage in it. But commerce is for private wealth, entrepreneurial wealth, investor wealth, and more. It is not for governed national wealth unless the commerce is nationalized. Maybe that's what Hamilton had in mind when he talked about commerce becoming, quote, a primary object of their political cares. Hamilton and the Federalists appear to believe that not only the Constitution and the federal government should serve elitists like himself, but the commerce of the nation should also. I can see why the anti-Federalists were so popular and why people are encouraged by government to study only the Federalist Papers. Consider this paragraph. "The ability of a country to pay taxes must always be proportioned in a great degree to the quantity of money in circulation and to the celerity with which it circulates. Commerce, contributing to both these objects, must of necessity render the payment of taxes easier and facilitate the requisite supplies to the treasury." In other words, don't tax more than a certain portion of the money supply so taxes flow in easily. So the goal here is to tax not on the necessary expenditures of government, but on how great a proportion the federal government can tax to facilitate supplies of money to the treasury most easily. It's also interesting that Hamilton does not trust the states at all regarding commerce or anything else, which is ironic because it's the states that delegate all power to the federal government through the Constitution. But Hamilton is so contemptuous of the states. He thinks their purpose is to conspire to commit commerce in a way the federal government could not tax. Again, according to Hamilton, like people, businesses are to serve the federal government. He says, "The relative situation of these states, the number of rivers with which they are intersected, and of bays that wash their shores, the facility of communication in every direction, the affinity of language and manners, the familiar habits of intercourse, all these are circumstances that would conspire to render an illicit trade between them a matter of little difficulty, and would ensure frequent evasions of the commercial regulations of each other." Stating things not at all in evidence, that they are in fact evident, Hamilton once again claims that only a national, not federal, national, as in a top-down supremacist government, can be trusted to collect the taxes and keep the treasury full. Whereas the states, which are sovereign entities, will break into confederacies and ruin all Hamilton's plans to run the economy with the national government. He concludes, "It is therefore evident that one national government would be able, at much less expense, to extend the duties on imports beyond comparison further than would be practicable to the states separately or to any partial confederacies. The only thing that is evident to me is that Alexander Hamilton wants a strong national government so his fellow elitists can control the economy and put away money in the treasury based on how much money they can get away with putting in the treasury and use for their own purposes." The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossie knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossie.
¿Qué pasa, chica? What's going on? What's happening?
Good morning. Dobre utra.
Dobre utra.
Buenos días.
Dobre utra. I love to speak fast Dobre Ukrainian
utra.
English.
Dobre utra. Okay, papachica.
Dobre utra. It's another beautiful day in South Florida. Well, not South, but I'm so used to being in Miami, in Florida. So, yes. I got news about the U.S. Department of Defense finally came out saying that there is 46 bio labs, bioweapon labs in the Ukraine, which most of them are destroyed by Putin already. So
okay.
They're almost done. Finally, they admitted it, funded by the military.
Do you have an article on that or a source I can post on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I have an article.
Yeah, because I'd be curious. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to come out. The whole thing is going to come out soon.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to some of my friends in Peru, and the inflation is out of control in Peru.
Why Peru?
It's ridiculous because Peru was in it with the vaccines, with Bill Gates, George Soros. Peru was one of the worst mandates, forcing people not to be with their own children. Like, if you had a family of five, you can only travel two people in the car. So husband and wife, what about the children? So it was ridiculous. They took all the hydroxychloroquine from the shelf, which you could buy them before at any time you wanted to. A lot of I have one of the richest girls in Peru. She's my girlfriend, and she doesn't know what she's going to do, get her money out, what to do. We were talking about it last night. And many people, the inflation, people are fighting in the street because of gas prices. About 11 people already died from stupidity in the streets.
What killed them? What kind of stupidity?
Arguing, fighting, gas prices. You know, people get dumb, you know. So it's
coming here.
Happening all over the
Yeah, that's coming here. I made this prediction that when gas hits $7.50 a gallon and $10 a gallon in California, but you're going to see the road rage. You're going to see gas stealing. You're going to have people, driving up to pumps and putting a gun to someone's head and saying, "Give me your credit card. You know, you're filling my tank."
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's going to happen. It's only a question of
it's
time.
Coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
so be armed. Be armed
Germany,
and be careful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in Germany, I carry mine every day. So.
Oh yeah.
In Germany, 20 to 50% within 3 days, the economy jumped. Boom. Within a weekend, things are out of control. People are, it is crazy. It is crazy. But it's going to happen worldwide. This globally. This is all done by Bill Gates, George Soros, the criminal Democrats. They want to destroy the world, including China, of course.
Well, let's talk about Ukraine for a second, because that's the major source of upset of European oil and natural
mm-hmm.
gas, because Russia has a pipeline to Europe. You know, I remember Angela Merkel, gave Trump the finger and said, "We're going to take Russian oil. We don't care about you." You know, so, and Trump's like, "Well, why are we paying for your defense from Russia if you're buying oil from them?" You know, and so that's why another reason we should get out of NATO. But are they taking an advantage of the war between Russia and Ukraine, or was this is Russia somehow involved in this way to sabotage energy worldwide and drive the prices up? I don't think so, but you never know.
I don't think Putin planned this to be sabotage at all.
Okay.
No.
They're just taking advantage of it?
This is the Democrats. They're sabotaging the whole thing and putting down like if he's the most criminal right now. And, don't get me mm-hmm. wrong. I don't like Putin. I don't like communists. Like mm-hmm. one of my missionary friends, because I told him the whole thing, what's going on in the Ukraine, he's calling mm-hmm. me that I'm a Putin lover. I said, no, I'm not. And a couple of people had a big event here with Zumba in town here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not going to support a Zumba for the Ukraine because all the money that you guys are going to raise are not going to go to the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. I'm going to personally send money to the Ukraine, which I have,
mm-hmm.
to 5 different families. I said, because the family are not getting the money, unless her family is getting the money. But that's a different story. We just sent $40 billion. Why should I continue sending money to the Ukraine? If I'm going to send money, I'm going to send it to personal families that I know.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sending no more money. They're already stealing all the money from the future of our children here.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
I've got a cure for that. Hold on. Let's get Pianki
out
of comment before we move on to the next issue. Yeah. Pianki?
Yeah, I agree. And you would have sent money to your people, loved ones in Ukraine, even if these wars had not even occurred. So the war necessarily isn't the reason why. It's because of your love for the people. But Putin has been demonized in American press. You see that. This admission comes out and it sheds light on, what was he mm-hmm. afraid of? Is it the fake pandemic that we've seen in America that caused the economy and everything else to go haywire?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying that Putin is a little angel, What's happening is that I think Putin has been putting up with so much from the Democrats because Putin gets accused for everything. Trump collusion, Trump prostitute, Trump this. It's just like I think they're getting sick and tired of this whole accusation. They use Russia for every little thing. Now they're using Ukraine for the wheat, for the fertilizer that the farmers cannot get. So it's all well organized, all planned. Bill Gates been buying thousands and thousands of acres because they want to build concentration camps to put the non-vaccinated people. They had it on their website on the CDC before. They took it down, I think.
Yes, too many of us. There's too many of us.
It,
they tried that in Australia and even in a country much smaller. Yeah, yeah, Pianchi.
So, but if they destroy these bio labs, then what future viruses do we have to worry from? This was created virus in order to cause the havoc that we're seeing, and they wanted to be close to Russia in order to start the same thing there, possibly. And Putin said, "Hell no."
Well, no, I think it's in Ukraine because Ukraine's corrupt. Ukraine, there are very few countries that are as corrupt as Ukraine, where you could put these bio labs. And where else would you put
Ukraine,
them? Ukraine. You know.
Yes, but just a minute. Ukraine is the cesspool of corruption. And Donald Trump says he's going to drain the swamps, and this is the beginning of draining the swamp. There's about 363 bioweapon labs in different areas in the world, okay, being put by the Democrats in our military, corrupt military. They will bring them all down. So the next one, because there's many bioweapon labs also in Taiwan, Taiwan will be hit next, and we believe the next one is Iran, Philippines, Thailand. And the reason we're hitting those next, it's because they have so much child trafficking. And Donald Trump right now is working with David Strait, and he's working with one of the head honchos from the Illuminati that she left. The cult, and she's been helping Donald Trump. They so far, David was telling us that they rescue 135 children so far from child trafficking, but they will rescue all the children of the world eventually. So there's so far there's five more countries that are going to be hit, like Ukraine, and at the end it's going to happen here.
Wait a minute. Because there's some parts of this that don't make sense. So
I know.
You know,
it's okay. You don't believe anything.
No, that's not true. I believe a lot of things. I'm just very skeptical.
Yeah.
See, you cross a line. Now, hold on. Let me explain this because people are listening and they're wondering what's going on. So here's how I take this. What you say makes sense up until this line that you cross where it doesn't make sense, where it's so organized and so well planned, and Trump's going to come in and all these wonderful things are going to happen.
Is.
Nothing. Hold on.
Hold on.
Nothing. Well, I'd love Trump to get back in office, but nothing is that well organized or planned. And the idea that you can create Ukraines in other countries with all the suffering and all the deaths and all the starvations and the imprisonments and the upheaval of everything in society in Ukraine just to destroy biolabs doesn't make sense to me. Which, if you want to destroy the biolabs, you destroy the biolabs. There are plenty of ways to destroy biolabs. Drones could do it. You could do it from, commando, special forces. There's tons of ways to destroy biolabs. Congress could actually defund them, take away their money. So there are plenty of things to do. You get upset. Hold on, Josie. You can upset the supply chain. What I'm saying is it doesn't make sense. Wait a minute.
You've got a clean mind so far.
Here's the thing, too. Here's what else doesn't make sense. All right, but I know you believe this absolutely, but I still, I can challenge it. And here's where I challenge it, too. It's not worth it, and we've talked about this before, it's not worth the cost to this country to wait, to be able to arrest all these people that you want to have arrested. Okay. Not that I want them to go free, because I don't. But the pain that this country is suffering, the amount of people that can't feed their kids they're trying to decide between food and going to work. And they're going to have mass people go on unemployment because they simply can't afford to get to work. All these problems that we're having, the addictions, the drug addictions, the spousal and child abuse, the assaults, the drug addictions, the alcohol addictions, all the things that are happening right now because we have an illegal government that is oppressing this country in ways that we've never had before. All right. Mm-hmm. Hold on. I'll be done in a second. But it's not worth the price. It is not worth it. I don't care how many people are arrested.
You don't know.
It's not. And you can't tell me. See, saying this is like McCarthy when he said, "I have a list of 57 communists." You got to watch the movie. What is it? I forgot what it's called. Manchurian Candidate, or the original one. All right. And he had a blank piece of paper. He says, "I have evidence." All these people that get up and say, "Well, I have evidence of this," and they have blank pieces of paper. Okay. If you can't give me a source, all right, it's not valid yet. Okay, because this can't be a secret operation.
You cannot know everything that is going to happen because you don't tell the criminal that he's going to come to be arrested.
Do you know everything that's going to happen?
Yes, I do.
Well, you know, here's the thing.
Well, how do you, wait a minute, how do you know? How do you know and I can't know? Wait, hold on a second, Bianca. How come you can know and I can't know?
We've been telling you, but you don't want to listen.
I'm challenged.
Same thing with these biolabs. Who wanted to believe in the biolabs? Who wanted to believe that Putin wasn't doing the thing that he's doing in reaction to why he's doing it?
Yeah. Well, he's sick and tired of having all these bioweapon labs closer to his country, very close. And it's been going on for many years. And these people, they've been creating disease. They're experimenting all kinds of stuff they're finding. But the main thing is not just the bioweapon labs. It's the children. They're rescuing thousands and thousands. They will be rescuing more than thousands and thousands of children. And all the money laundered that the Democrats have created in the Ukraine and Iran with Obama, that he's in a plane full. We're going to get it back. There's so much that a lot of people are clueless.
But again, you don't have to go to war to do this. You know, this is, you know, child trafficking is a criminal thing. You know, biolabs are a criminal matter.
We really
can't second guess why come.
Okay, let's go, Pianca.
We really can't second guess why come Russia used the power that it did. And we know one thing for sure is that Ukraine is not going to defeat Russia. But they could have been
experimenting. No, they just have to make it miserable. They just have to make it miserable.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hang on for a second. Okay. They could have been experimenting on people. I've heard conversation about some of these mass killers. It says some of the things that they are doing don't just seem logical for a normal human being to do. Well, maybe they are a creation of some bio lab. We don't know.
We do know. We know exactly
what's going
on.
Here's the thing,
on.
Though, but you're not dealing, you know, I deal in logic and reason, okay? So in other words, if it's reasonable, well, of course it's okay. But if it's reasonable and it makes sense and I can use logical steps to get there, then, you know, then I understand and I'll accept it. But right now what's happening is not logical.
You know,
logical.
When
and
we
not,
were talking
on,
to
it's,
you
it's
Saturday, my husband goes, honey, you can talk all the long till the cows, whatever they're saying is, but
cows
Greg is
home.
Not on board yet.
No,
that's exactly what my husband said on Saturday. And the other couple that came in, and we were talking about it. So it's okay. Many people will not be on board until it's happening. But it's
well,
okay.
You're talking about
right.
a military dictatorship. Of course I'm not on board. What you're talking about is just as bad as what we have now.
No, you can't replace one
dictatorship with another. You can't put in
it's
a military
dictatorship
to make things right. Let me finish this thought.
But there's examples.
This is
there
critical.
Are examples of what you've seen. It has happened elsewhere in the world. It happened in Ghana, West Africa, where Jerry Rawlings, and he was a flight lieutenant, seeing the corruption that was going over, took over throughout the raggedy government. Then he let the citizens come back and form as they presently have, a democratic ran government.
All right. Forget.
But we don't have to do that
for now, okay?
Yeah, we've got perfectly valid ways to see. We can remove people without that happening.
It's okay.
Well, you keep saying it's okay, like that is so condescending. I can't tell you to tell me okay, it's okay to believe what you want to believe. You'll understand later. That is very condescending. You know, I mean, I respect what you say. I just disagree with you. That's all.
It's okay, Greg. Everything that Desiree told you yesterday, she's on board. She's in group
So what
A.
is this? What does it mean to be on board? What does it mean to accept this? It's starting
Meaning
to sound cult-like.
We understand they're telling us exactly what's going to happen.
Who's
and Q and other groups. I get information from a CIA top secret also in my ear at church.
Okay. Right.
Because we have to do it like that. We cannot do it over the phone. So I know a lot of stuff.
Well, we used to have Q reports. I mean, it was open. It was on Twitter. You could find exactly what QAnon was saying. Is QAnon available now? I mean,
it
where can
open.
I read this stuff? Okay, so is it on Twitter? Where also on Twitter? Where is it? Where do you find QAnon?
I'll send it to you so you can look.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to.
There's a lot of people giving us information, like David Strait, that he works directly with Donald Trump. But you say you don't believe in the guy, so hey. There's
well,
not
I
much
listen
you
to
can
him.
Do.
I listen to him. What he said didn't make any sense to me.
It's okay.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and,
glad
and
you
I,
keep saying
and
it's
I have
okay.
a Filipino and his wife. They're like, oh my God, they can't believe what they're hearing from this guy.
He's the one that reported about Melania being a poison at the same time he did.
There's a danger in wanting to believe things, and this is why I'm very skeptical of a lot of news things sometimes, because people want to believe the worst, and you find out that it's actually not that not what people are saying. And so people want to believe that Trump can. Well, you say you do.
It depends on where your source is coming from.
Yeah,
because
but
you know the source.
Go ahead.
About Putin
my husband,
not being,
my
being
husband
straightforward.
Travels with Mike.
Go ahead.
My husband travels with Mike Flynn. They're doing a lot of events. They're together with Mike Flynn, Cindy Powell. That's all I can tell you, okay? So we have sources. We know exactly what's happening.
Well, I met Cindy Powell. Let's get her on the show. In fact, I'd love to get Mike Flynn on the show.
So busy,
let's find out.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Lynn Wood. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Josie.
Yeah,
you
know,
what you're talking about is very improbable and very highly to, you know, highly organized. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, even if the Democrats in Congress, which I have no respect for whatsoever, stepped in and said you can't have a military coup, I mean, who's to say that your military coup is good and someone else's military coup is bad? Military coups in general are bad. Now, if it worked in Ghana, that's great,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they don't have the constitutional tools that we have necessarily to be able to fix a situation like that. We have legal, peaceful tools to stop everything that Brandon's doing right now by having the battleground states simply decertify his electors. He's out of office. Okay.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it.
They won't do it. They won't do it, Greg.
It's simple to say that. We have all the legal judges and everything, but since they all are corrupt, we have to get rid of them but one by one in order to put good judges, in order to bring them all down. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, but remember, all power corrupts.
All
power corrupts. The best of intentions.
We're going to wait a lifetime. Yeah. We're going to wait a lifetime for your grandchild who's 20 and 25 years go by of his life waiting on the power to finally corrupt. It has to be made to corrupt and get the heck out the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we're going to change all that. Trust me. It's coming. Let me go to China, Shanghai. COVID lockdown extended because I'm wasting my time. You know, it's okay. You're in group B, so there's nothing I can do right now, but I cannot tell you a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So China's got all the lockdowns. They extended the lockdown, and people are really starving. I'm trying to get information from that Sumba young woman that went in to bury her mom, one of our Sumba that I used to dance with, and she's still stuck in China. I don't know if she's going to make it out alive. It's very sad what is happening. But I've been telling many of my people, friends, family, for the last 2 years, because they've been telling us to prepare 2 years ago with My Patriot Food Supply. I'm not trying to advertise for them. I wish I could make money from that. Because
I'll check it too. I've already talked. I've tried to get them on the show, and I've asked them to sponsor the show because we are a natural for them to sponsor.
Did you get a hold of them?
And I talked to people there. I emailed people there. I've been in contact with them. No, they said they didn't say anything. They just stopped, talking to me.
Okay.
So yeah. So if you know someone at My Patriot Supply,
I was going to try to get a hold of them.
I'd love to have them on the show. See, those are natural prepper groups like My Patriot Supply, food storage places like that, and gun companies are natural sponsors for Action Radio. Any group that the left targets is a natural sponsor for Action Radio, and I've tried to reach out to them.
Yeah.
It's almost like we have to be big enough for them
to
sponsor.
To them,
you know, it's like getting a bank loan. You have to prove you don't need it. You know, we have to be big enough that we don't need them. Then
exactly.
They'll sponsor us. Yeah, okay.
Well, right now they really don't need it because everybody's like running to get the food and the prices are going up and up and up. I've been buying it 10 years ago. 2 years ago, I've been telling some of my friends. Now they're, what is the name of that website? Well, you know, now they're doing something about it because they see what's happening.
Right.
Food shortage. People need to get 4 or 5 chickens. So by the time 3 months come, or less, when the thing's going to hit here, it's going to be a mess. No food, eggs. My girlfriend just got about 5 chickens that only lay eggs. So they're growing quickly, and pretty soon she'll have tons of eggs. Plant your own vegetable garden. Because things are really going to be tough. Items like beef. Remember I told you I bought 2 cows?
a huge cows in my freezer already. I sold the other one because it was too much. So we've been preparing since last year with beef and chicken and things like that in the freezer. We just bought a solar panel generator, which it doesn't make noise. And you can bring it inside the house because a regular generator is very loud and you have to have it outside and anybody can come and take it. And we do have four of those. That's how I survive with my doors open on my business because I have two generators outside over there. They are expensive, but the solar panel generators are like $1,200, but they're worth it because you can bring it inside. And you don't need gas because we're going to run out of gas. The solar...
you know, Delsey, those solar powered refrigerators and freezers work very well too, especially the Chess one. Solar powered freezer is on the freezer on one side, and on the other side you got the refrigerator. You got two different doors that open straight up. And it's the Chess. The regular upright is not as good because when you open the doors all the cold air falls out the bottom. And they're cheap.
Also, they're cheap? Good. And also, if you notice, so many people are moving to the state of Florida, but not only to Florida, they're moving to Texas. They're moving to conservative state because the people following Q, the people that are being informed, like me and many, but I'm being informed throughout the CIA top secret, just not just Q. They want to be in a place, feel more safe than in a radical state because it's going to be worse. Like New York City is going to be worse. New Jersey, California, I mean, it is going to be bad when it comes, the whole thing when it hits. And whenever it's going to hit, that's exactly where you're going to be, right there, because you're not going to be able to probably move around.
You know, we get predictions all the time. We had Y2K and everybody, you know, stockpiled and went kind of crazy on that. And, you know, in the 70s, it was global winter. And, you know, then we got climate change and all this kind of stuff. You know, the things that the predictions, you know, the end of the world, there's always an end of the world prediction, always. And what I'm seeing.
This is like a hurricane coming.
Okay, well, I mean, hurricanes do come. I mean, bad things do happen. I'm not discounting that. But the problem here, Josie, is that you've had predictions on the show, and you've had times and dates when things are supposed to happen, and not one of them happened. You know, so this is why I'm skeptical. This whole idea that I have
people
a secret and you can't
Jesus
know it.
Coming back forever.
Say that, Panky. What was that?
People have been talking about Jesus coming back forever. But the thing that I'm seeing now, you're seeing calamities happen in places where what those places produce is necessary. I never seen so many chicken poultry places that all of a sudden catch on fire and burn up.
See, that's a problem.
Exactly.
I understand that. That's a huge problem.
This is not conspiracy, Greg. This is just to be cautious and prepare your family.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
Just basically things.
But I even heard Sidney Powell. Yeah, go ahead.
Just like Bianchi just said, these criminals in our government, they blowing up more than 20 or more manufacturing food factories, companies. And they're sending little drones and boom, catch on fire, bye-bye. And another one, and our milk from our kids. This is not a conspiracy. This is not reading the future that is going to – you can see it with your own eyes. You can go to the grocery store. You can see exactly what's happening. Last night I was at Winnie.
Well, that's why that's happening.
And this,
you know, I know why these things are happening. The food processing plants, that's kind of crazy. I got to look into that more. But I understand exactly why the economy is the way it is. It's because the Congress borrowed too much money and printed too much money. I know exactly why our energy situation is the way it is, because they've shut off the supply. They've shut off production. They've shut off fracking. They've shut off distribution and pipelines and everything else.
Yeah,
they've taken oil leases that have no oil.
Like this.
There's a line, though. There's this line that you cross. You know, you go from logical, reasonable facts, you know, and things that we talk about here, and then you get this realm, you get into quite literally the conspiracy realm. And this is why I have a disagreement with it. And I think that line gets it's very clear to me, but I don't think it's clear to you. And this is where and that's okay too, you know. But this is why we disagree on this, because you'll go from you know these shortages and then say, okay, well we're going to have these things are going to happen, all these people are going to get arrested, and these countries are going to get invaded, and all their biolabs are going to be destroyed, and that's fine to say that, but I want to let you know that this is where I disagree with you, okay? That once you cross that line, once you get from a logical situation that we can use reason and logic to analyze, that you get into a situation where we can't because I've got a secret.
Because you're the type of person that doesn't believe until it's happening right in front of your face, and it doesn't happen like that, sweetie.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. No. But I don't see. I mean, you know, we're talking about the coming of Jesus. That makes sense to me. Okay. Even though I can't see it, and I don't know when it's going to happen. I understand that. That's what faith is all about.
We don't know when Jesus is coming.
I have no idea. Yeah. But I believe that he's coming back. That makes sense to me. Okay. There's a difference between that and events that don't make sense to me. Okay. And so this is where the I've got a
and
secret. I know more than you.
They never will until they're right in your face. They never will until they're right happening in your face. It's, oh my God.
No, but I can see the signs ahead of time. If I can see the signs ahead of time, see, I don't see the signs.
But these shortages in food price increases is urgent. They wouldn't happen under normal circumstances.
Exactly.
The fact that we depend so much on, like China buying up the pork production facilities here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things is architect and designed with some scrupulous minds in order to put the United States food supply in the shambles that we're starting to see it progress to.
See, and this is where I do agree. I mean, I know there are people, the globalists, are actively working to destroy our country. It's everywhere. They stole an election.
They are.
You know, they've ruined our energy supply. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, okay? But your solution doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying.
Bill Gates buying up land at the rate that he's doing.
Well, see, we could prevent that. We could legislate against it.
No.
You know, there are ways to stop these things without having a massive military takeover of our country. That's where I have the problem. I'm going to ask Dr. Pry about this. He might find it interesting.
And he's going to disagree with me because I know he doesn't know. Yeah, he doesn't know.
Yeah, see, and,
what I
but
know.
You, but listen to the arrogance of your argument for a second, because it's like, you know more than I know. You know secrets
well,
that
we've
I
been,
don't know.
We've been
you, wait a minute, wait,
what's
let me finish
happening.
This. Let me finish this. Let me finish because this is really critical. I've heard this before. You know, you're saying that you know something
yeah.
I don't know. You have a secret I don't know. I can't tell you what I know. But it's going
to
happen. I can tell you it's going
to
happen.
I
okay,
have tried
so that puts
to share
you in a position.
You before, but you don't believe it. Look, I just sent you 5 days worth of seminar that you can learn a lot. You say, I don't like that guy. Hey, he's not talking. So you know what I mean? It's like you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink it. So
well, unless what he's drinking doesn't.
You.
Unless
you
know
the big
poison.
The big,
you know, what is bad
big
water? Hey, what if you lead a horse to bad water?
Well,
you know, this is what I'm thinking. All right, go ahead, Bianchi.
One of the things that kicked it over the top was this election of 2020. When you have, what's the lady, the senator that's a Republican that said that still talks down on the votes there? I can't think of her name. McCain. Is that her name, McCain?
No, I think you're thinking of the vice president's daughter, Cheney, Lynn Cheney.
Cheney, yeah. Listen to what look at
criminal.
All the evidence out
she's
there, and she comes right out. She comes right out. Yeah, Cheney. She comes out and continues to say that these things is not happening, and she gets set
well, she's
stage,
part of the propaganda. She's part
somebody,
of the coup.
Exactly.
Yeah,
she's
part
a liar.
Of
well, yeah, she's part of. So the thing that kicked it over is that Americans went through the process to do things as they was designed, and because of the power that exists in these crooked politicians, it's not happening. That's when a military steps in.
So at what point would it be okay for the military to do this? And what, Bianchi, I want to give you a shot at this here. How would it happen and how would it be constitutional?
They would step in and start putting people on trial. Apparently their intelligence is much greater than ours. It's the same with Russia. Russia's intelligence on what's going on with those biolabs is much greater than the information we can cover. They have the ability to eavesdrop and read people's emails and everything else.
Yeah.
Cell phone
so
communications.
Let's follow this through. So who in the military would do this? Would General Flynn be in charge? Would he become president and start arresting people? Okay, so who would do it?
The person Look, that swore to uphold the U.S. Constitution and live by it.
Okay. But
Look,
the action of a coup is in direct violation of the Constitution.
But they don't care.
Yeah,
they're breaking every law. Look,
right.
Greg. Look
what
on the jury. All the jury with John Durham. Donald
John
Trump
Durham's part of the deep state. John Durham is an operative of the deep state. Yes,
no,
he is.
No, he's not. He's
he took
not.
Too long.
He's not.
Yes, he is.
Okay, it's
why,
okay.
Why, is a, why did he only have one charge to one person on the very last day of the statute of limitations?
Okay.
He did that to keep
but,
his job so he prevents somebody real from being there. He's deep state.
Because they're exposing the corruption. Look at the juror. They were all friends with Hillary, the foundation. They were all coming from their side. And going in the jury trial, John Durham knew exactly what's going to happen. Exactly.
He knew
what's
he wasn't
going to
get conviction?
Exactly. He knew. Yeah. But they extracted out of stuff so the world can see that Hillary was the one that gave orders. So, you know, they're putting pieces and things together, and they eventually they have to get rid of this corruption judge that they have in this country everywhere being paid by the Democrats. And because you cannot bring this one or that one in trial because the same thing just going to happen like it just happened last week with John Durham. Exactly what's going to happen. And they already know, like they did with the movie. Look at the movie 2000 Mule. Liz Cheney said, oh, it's a debunk. It's not true. It's not debunked.
Well, of course she said that, but she's part of the deep state. But here's the thing, though.
Exactly.
So we know this evidence. We know the evidence in 2000 Mules. Well, the problem is not 2000 Mules. The problem is the states that haven't decertified. Look, I got Dr. Pry on the line, so he was held up just a little bit before he got here. Let's get to him.
Yeah, but why come they haven't decertified? That's the question.
Well, that is
why
that's the question.
Why won't they decertify?
Yeah, see, well, they're too late.
Well,
they should have done
it
about January 21st.
You're
Jeffy,
talking
you
about
one more comment.
Safeguards that's in place.
Yeah.
Well, you're speaking on the safeguards that's in place. Why come the people haven't made the officials decertify like they're supposed to?
I'm trying to. It's not working. We need help.
All right.
Hold on,
you guys have a blessed
hold
day.
On, everybody. Get this going here. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
Boy, am I glad you called. We were having this outrageous discussion about a military coup and a takeover to clean out all the to clean out the current coup. It was quite an hour. Hello, sir.
Well,
how you doing?
I first want to apologize. I want to apologize to you and to your audience for being so late at calling in. You know, my time isn't always my own. I got an unexpected call from somebody in Washington. I just couldn't get off the line.
Well, that's
so
fine. No, it's completely understandable. Don't you never have to apologize for that. Stuff happens. We'll pick up where we are. We've still got most of the hour. And so I'm just going to let you get to your topic. Your topic is fascinating. So let's get right to it. And, you know, maybe you can invite some of those Washington callers of yours onto the show with you sometime, which you have done before.
Well,
it's been fascinating. Yeah. Sir?
Before I get to that main topic that I emailed you about, there were a couple of things that I was reading about subsequently that I just wanted to make people aware of that are just very disturbing. You know, first, I think it's NBC News has done an article where they interviewed 25 former Obama administration, basically the kind of people who think strategically, quote unquote, for the Democrats. In previous presidential administrations, plus friendly academics about what would President Biden do, what should President Biden do if Russia goes nuclear in Ukraine. And the So even despite the one thing that's good about that is despite the fact that the intelligence community is reassuring everybody that, oh, we see no evidence of them getting ready to go nuclear, even the Biden administration's backers and advisors all consider it that we are so near the nuclear brink that we need to be thinking about, well, what will we do if Putin goes nuclear?
Yeah.
And I found it very disturbing that almost all of them basically said, well, we'll do nothing. You know, that maybe we'll exercise more sanctions, that we'll, he'll be condemned, you know, by the whole world, you know, for violating the nuclear taboo, you know, but basically we won't do anything. I think only in one of them, and this was not even a Democrat. There's something called the McCain Foundation, you know, which is established, you know, in the aftermath of John McCain, which is a so-called Republican think tank, establishment Republican think tank. And that one person said, well, it would be regime change. We'll go in there with our conventional military and overthrow Putin. You know, how are you going to do that when he's using nuclear weapons and we're not? But that was the only one. All the rest of them basically are talking about, from the Russian perspective, that would be a surrender and a great victory for them, for us to do nothing. I'm not saying that what we should be doing is making nuclear threats ourselves, but but all of them should have declined to be interviewed on this point. You know, the KGB, excuse me, the SVR is going to read that, the GRU is going to read that. Exactly. And they're going to say, oh, look, you know, the administration and their close-knit advisors are basically going to surrender if we go nuclear. So that's one thing, to wake up into the morning and find that NBC News is basically, they're always accusing us on the right of being Putin puppets. But, you know, this is basically.
But who owns NBC? Do you know who owns NBC? That might give us a clue as to what they're doing and who's pulling their strings.
Oh, I just think they're idiots. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I just think they're very, you know, they're very extremely naive. And, you know, and this is business as usual for the left, you know, that they think that a nuclear war is unwinnable and must never be fought. But when things are getting so stark, one of the things that was said in this article, too, you know, one of the people who probably should be put up in front of a wall if we ever do get into a nuclear war is a guy named Jeffrey Lewis. He's one of the favorite so-called nuclear experts of the left, of the liberal mainstream media, and of Democrat administrations. Professor Jeffrey Lewis, who teaches, he's a political scientist who is associated with a think tank out in Monterey, California, the Middlebury Institute of International Relations out in Monterey. You know, so he's basically one of these, you know, far left academics. He has never served in the Department of Defense or the intelligence community, but he passes himself off as a nuclear expert. And that's how he's described, a nuclear weapons expert by the press, and including in this article. And he told NBC News that Russia doesn't have any low-yield nuclear weapons, that the lowest-yield nuclear weapons that they have are equivalent to the ones that were used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that is a complete lie. And that will help set us up for a surprise attack. If Putin does use very low-yield weapons, ultra-low-yield weapons, which he most certainly does have, you know, even we've got low-yield weapons, you know, even during the Reagan administration. The W-80 that we want to put on the silicon end has a variable yield that can go down to 5 kilotons. But the Russians have got weapons that are even lower than that, you know, that are a fraction of a kiloton. Okay, so that's one thing I wanted to say before we get to the other thing. The other development that I thought was very important was there's a poll has recently been taken, I think very significant, that 71% of South Koreans want South Korea to develop its own independent nuclear capability because they have no confidence that the United States will protect them from a nuclear North Korea.
Well, they're right.
70%.
They're right.
Well, they're right, but it's also very bad in terms of the undermining the tattering of the nuclear umbrella. The principle of extended nuclear deterrence is coming apart at the seams, you know. And yeah, they're right when you think it through. It hasn't helped that the United States basically doesn't have any tactical nuclear weapons. You know, we're trying to convince them that we're maintaining an extended deterrence policy with strategic nuclear weapons. And that is far less believable than tactical nuclear weapons. And yet, I think this underscores again why how unwise it was for President Biden to defund the SLCMN, the sea-launched cruise missile, the nuclear. It's basically a modernized version of the Tomahawk. You know, Obama got rid of all the Tomahawks. That was a tactical nuclear missile, cruise missile, very accurate, can fly under radar, long range, 1,500 kilometers or more. And it was deployed on our attack submarines. It could be used off guided missile cruisers. It could be fired off destroyers, tactical platforms.
Yeah.
And it helped us win the Cold War, you know. So, you know, and it made credible the idea that we could respond to Russia's tactical nuclear threat. But we got rid of the Tomahawk and all of our tactical nuclear weapons, you know, with the exception of a couple of hundred that are in NATO Europe. I'm writing another article. I mean, in effect, everybody always refers to those 100 to 200 gravity bombs that we've got bunkered in NATO. Those things are so, when you really unpackage the politics of them and what their technology is, in effect, we really don't have any tactical nuclear weapons. They would not constitute a credible, usable weapon in the eyes of our adversaries. You know, the U.S. can't use them independently. We've got to get permission from all the NATO members to use them, and we don't even deliver them. The host government has to agree, and they have to be delivered by the host government. You know, I mean, it's very hard to imagine Italy or Germany or one of the Benelux countries or Turkey deciding to make itself put a nuclear bullseye on its back in order to save Latvia, you know? So, and not to mention the fact that they have to be delivered by aircraft through increasingly robust Russian air defenses.
Cruise missiles are such a great weapon. First of all, there's no person on board, so that saves lives. You know, these things are slow, accurate, hard to shoot down. I don't think they cost a fortune. In fact, you could probably take the F-35 program, which is a total turkey, and use cruise missiles instead, and have far more, you know, as they say, bang for the buck. The efficiency of a submarine launched, aircraft launched cruise missile, or even, I don't know, do they have land based cruise missiles? I don't know if they even had those.
Yes,
but
they were called the GLICKM back in the Cold War, the ground launched cruise missile. But yeah, the Tomahawk could be launched from air, it could be launched from sea,
fabulous weapon.
It could be launched from the ground if you wanted it to be used that way. Right now, they were talking about, you know, restoring tactical nuclear capabilities to the Navy, you know, because it's range limited, of course. But the idea of putting the Navy ships in attack submarines, I mean, extended deterrence best works is the way it worked during the Reagan administration and during the Cold War. You know, we didn't have to engage in heated rhetoric against North Korea or nuclear enemies. You know, we didn't have to do any demonstrations. The knowledge that we had a highly effective tactical nuclear capability, that quiet knowledge, that's what peace through strength is all about. You know, you don't have to raise the decibels of your voice over some provocation or whatever. You just move a tactically nuclear-armed submarine or missile cruiser or destroyer within range of the enemy to let him know, you know, that we're taking it, that we need to be taken seriously too. And that also helps defuse, you know, the escalatory possibilities, you know, because when you do engage in heated rhetoric and military demonstrations, that's like 1914 all over again. And that was another thing I wanted to mention today before we got to what I was considering the main topic. It turns out that this month, because we don't have tactical nuclear weapons to assure the South Koreans, We're trying to shore up extended deterrence and our nuclear umbrella and give it credibility by doing exactly the kind of things they did in 1914. Earlier this month, there was a unprecedented launch of ballistic missiles by North Korea. They launched
a coordinated launch
of 8 ballistic missiles into the sea. And our response was to have the South Koreans launch 7 ballistic missiles plus conduct an air exercise. So is this how it's going to be? Because we don't have Silicon N, that in order to convince our allies that we're serious, we have to engage in actual military tit-for-tat. They launch a ballistic missile, we're going to launch a ballistic missile. I mean, what could go wrong with that, right? That's an extremely dangerous game to play in the nuclear missile age.
Well, you what if the guidance is hacked? Can you hack the guidance of a nuclear missile and reprogram it to go somewhere else? And what kind of cybersecurity?
Cyber warfare and all the rest. Okay. You know, what if Kim Jong-un gets up off the wrong side of the bed and it's in the middle of some major crisis, which is likely to be when they're engaged in these kinds of activities.
Yeah.
You know, again, it could be 1914 all over again, and you could have a war, a nuclear war, result from miscalculation. You know, it just is so much safer and saner to deploy the Slithum and have something there so you don't have to engage in this kind of behavior. But this is the path the Biden administration has decided to go down for us. You know?
Well, they didn't decide it. Someone decided it for him. I'm curious who's behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can say – here's an expression for you. You can say that our nuclear umbrella won't open because it's not going to cover anybody. It's not there. They know it's not there. I don't know if it ever actually was there, because the idea that we would go to a nuclear war to defend a country – you know, that's not ours. That's almost a contradiction itself. But the other thing is, we've armed our enemy. We haven't armed, but we've allowed our enemies to get armed. I mean, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. That didn't make the world safer. Iran's going to have nuclear weapons. You know, all these different countries, Russia, China, you know, the countries that have nuclear weapons, and yet we stop our friends from getting nuclear weapons. South Korea, Japan, Australia, India. Well, India has them, but the other ones, South Korea, Japan, and Australia. All these countries that really need nuclear weapons. You know, and we're not helping them get them, you know, as a deterrent, because they don't have to worry about our umbrella. They'd have their own umbrella, you know, so it would be better for them to do it.
And the ultimate failure of extended deterrence of the so-called nuclear umbrella is exactly that, because there are an increasing number of voices in the national security community that are saying exactly what you're saying. There are still a minority, but some are saying, you know, we need to give Taiwan nuclear weapons, for example.
Absolutely.
You know, there was an article written this year about that, you know, because our extended deterrence policy just isn't credible anymore. And but we're responsible for not being credible. And I agree with you that it was always a Titanic bluff, okay? You know?
Yeah.
I never really believed that if a tactical nuclear war brought out, well, it depends on the scenario. In some scenarios, for example, you know, I'm sure that if during the Cold War, if Russia had tried to roll over NATO Europe with conventional forces, that we would have resorted to tactical nuclear weapons. I mean, we were prepared to do that. But then we were defending American lives, you know, because we had hundreds of thousands of troops based in NATO. And so we didn't want our guys slaughtered and taken prisoner by the Russians. You know,
that doesn't go
idea.
Well. Ask the Germans, that doesn't go well being taken by the Russians. Yeah.
Right. But this idea that for, you know, a country, that for other countries that we are going to trade Los Angeles for Taipei, the capital of Taiwan, as a Chinese general.
I remember that.
Challenged extended deterrence back in 1996 when they were barraging the territorial waters around Tehran with short-range ballistic missiles called the M9, and in conversations with our State Department, they basically said, don't you even think about defending Taiwan? And we know you won't, because you are not willing to trade Los Angeles for Taipei. And ever since then, has been increasingly on the minds of our allies. But you know, when we had a robust tactical nuclear arsenal, it gave technological credibility and it gave political credibility to deterrence. And Slithum N, if we deployed enough of them quickly enough, you know, maybe it would shore it up, because and maybe this has been misguided, but one of the State Department's, one of the U.S. government's chief goals has always been non-proliferation. You know, we don't want other countries getting nuclear weapons, even our own allies. But it may be that you're right, and this growing minority voice in the national security community is that it may be correct that the nuclear so-called nuclear umbrella has had its day. I think another reason, one of the reasons people like you and these other voices are so willing to give up the nuclear umbrella is because you're nationalists. You know, you think about what is in the United States' best interests, and it's really hard to make a case if you're got an America First foreign policy that it's worth it for us to put our nation at risk for the sovereignty of Taiwan or South Korea or any of these other countries around the globe. The globalists are the ones, you know, who they have dominated our foreign and defense policy, and they're the ones that are very reluctant to let go of the nuclear umbrella, the concept of extended deterrence, because this is one of the ways that America remains in charge of the world order.
Exactly.
The American Empire policy.
Yeah, it is so true. And I was thinking about that as you're talking too, that the nuclear umbrella is a method of controlling other nations. And if you believe in independence and America First, you want other nations to be just as independent and just as responsible for their own defense and just as capable in defending themselves. So it's actually anti-American, this nuclear umbrella policy, I think.
Yes, yeah, I agree. It may not be anti-American until you actually have to get in a war. And then America suffers, you know, as a consequence of it, you know. And but that's
we suffer economically. Just maintaining something like that is a huge burden economically that we don't need either. There we go. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, and the obviously the escalatory risks are profound. Mm-hmm. Anyway, those are some of the things that in my readings this morning, you know, I wanted to add to the conversation. Because they're really important developments. You know, I mean, this business about, you know, 71% of South Koreans, I mean, I really think that is the writing on the wall, that the nuclear umbrella extended deterrence has had its day. And obviously it hasn't been helped by the very weak political military leadership the United States has. You know, if Trump probably kept it alive for 4 years, just by the sheer force of his personality, you know, people had confidence that he would act, you know, our foreign allies. But, you know, obviously they don't have confidence and shouldn't in this administration. And I guess the Ukraine war, transitioning to the main thing I wanted to talk about, is part of the death of the, I mean, it may be the death sentence for extended deterrence. Maybe I should write an article with that title. Washington hasn't woken up for it yet, up to that fact yet. But here we've got, you know, this major war in Europe, you know, with the Russians making nuclear threats that are, for all the denial behavior by the Biden administration, is obviously taking them seriously. That's why we don't impose a no-fly zone. And there's all kinds of limits on the arms we're providing to Ukraine. And I don't object to that. I don't even think we should be in Ukraine because it doesn't serve an America First foreign policy. You know, there's nothing in Ukraine except avoiding nuclear war with Russia that's a vital interest of the United States. But the globalists want that war with Russia. But all of our allies see that this policy basically boils down to fighting to the death of the last brave Ukrainian, that we're willing to give them arms, but we haven't been. Where are we? You know, the NATO alliance, the United States, for all of their talks about how important it is that Russia not conquer Ukraine, that we're not there. And the reason we're not there, because the Russian army is on the ropes, or supposedly on the ropes. Even
what does that mean exactly for Russia? I mean, it's a big army. How can they be on the ropes exactly? What's that
mean? That's the common wisdom that's out there. You know, that they didn't succeed in conquering Ukraine in 72 hours, which is what our intelligence community and I personally thought was going to happen. But that's they may have, we've talked earlier on other shows, you know, they may have other motives, including sucking us into a war that's there. But if there is anything, you know, to the argument that the Russians are on the ropes And they have their military efforts have fallen far short. It may be because of a revolution in military affairs. You know, we like to keep telling the people it's because we're sending the Ukrainians javelins, you know, and it's because of our weaponry. In fact, most of the weaponry that's been used against the Russians is Russian weaponry. You know, it's the inventory that Ukraine.
That's really interesting. That this is the first case where weaponry of the same type has been used against other folks. You're really judging the people who are using it. You know, the training and other factors, but because they're using exactly the same weapons. You got MiGs going against MiGs. You know, you've got tanks going against tanks that are the same. I find that fascinating. Military analysis, are people looking at this and seeing what happens when like weapons, you know, face each other in the same conflict? This is unusual.
I think the denial behavior because of Afghanistan in our military community, there are some. I mean, there are people like me who have been pointing out, look, it isn't chiefly the Western aid, you know, it's that the Ukrainians know how the Russians think because they were trained in the same way. Ukrainian general staff used to be part of the Russian general staff, so they know how the Russians think. They know the Russian tactics. They've got the same equipment. The Russians, most of their victories have been achieved with Russian equipment. The Pentagon in Washington wants to beat its chest. They're still suffering from their damaged credibility from Afghanistan. And so they want to crow about our contribution to the Ukrainian victories and act as if the Ukrainian victories signify what we would do, what we would be able to accomplish if we were in that, because we're giving them 10% of their, I mean, we have given them a lot. We've exhausted our own stockpiles, but most of what we've given them is not mostly what has achieved the victories, with some exceptions. And this is where the revolution in military affairs comes in, that we should be paying attention to, but we're not. And we're not the only ones. We have provided some of these unmanned air vehicles that, you know, can fire missiles. One of these things is the Switchblade, and but we're not the only ones. The Turks have provided them with the Ukrainians with these unmanned aerial vehicles. They're basically flying killer robots. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Very inexpensive.
Wow.
They're made out of plastic. They don't travel fast. They're very low altitude. And, you know, basically they operate at treetop level or a couple of hundred feet. And all of that is to the good because it makes them almost invisible to radar, makes them stealth on the cheap. And you can have classical air dominance with jets, as the Russians, for example, have had over Ukraine. You know, you've got they have a vastly superior air force, you know, but they've been staying out of the area because the Ukrainian air defenses are so good, which is another lesson we should take. Those Ukrainian air defenses are Russian air defenses. They're actually last generation Russian air defenses. They're not the newer stuff. So even last generation Russian air defenses that are possessed by the Ukrainians have been able to shoot down a lot of Russian aircraft. But even if the Russians had dominance, air dominance, it wouldn't matter, because the real important air dominance that matters now is at this drone level, the level where the drones operate. They're closer to the ground. You know, they're the ones that are taking out tanks and armored fighting vehicles, you know, so successfully. And
how are they doing,
you know,
that?
So,
I mean, what does a drone carry? You know, we need to sort of, I guess, revamp our idea of what a drone is, because I see drones as being entire air forces at some point. There'll be ships that'll have nothing but drones on them. You know, aircraft carriers won't be aircraft carriers. They'll be drone carriers, because you can run a whole bunch of computers on your aircraft carrier, you know, and run an entire, you know, or a supercomputer can run an entire fleet of drones into a battle. I mean, this is where I see this going. So how good are drones today? What, you know, if a drone can kill a tank, what kind of missile are they carrying on those things, and how many do they have? And how fast are they going?
Let's take a little drone. That's a good question about what is a drone, all right? Because this is so new, this revolution in military affairs, the nomenclature hasn't really been worked out. There's a suddenly there's a big debate about what is an armed, unmanned vehicle, a drone, a UAV, and part of the reason for that is suddenly, you know, the lawyers in the Department of State and the Pentagon are saying that the United States is violating the missile technology control regime by providing these weapons to
Ukraine.
You know, and so they want to change the nomenclature so that it's legal. Okay.
Oh.
Anyway.
Lawyer move.
But take an example of one of the most modest technologies, you know, which is the switchblade that we've been provided. It's a little drone or, you know, flying killer robot, whatever you want to call it, that can be fired by one man. It comes in a something like that looks like a mortar, and it operates a lot like a mortar, you know, and it can be launched, and it's called the switchblade because once it launches, once an individual soldier launches it, the wings spring out, okay? Mm. And then it's got a computer in it, and it maneuvers. It will go up to a high altitude and look for a tank, and it'll come down on the top of the tank. And that's why they're so effective at destroying the tanks, because the tanks, the reactive armor, you know, it tends to not be on the top of the tanks. It's usually on the side.
Well, it goes to the turret, or where does it go through? I'm curious now.
On the turret, or it hits in the engine compartment, but it hits it from above, where the armor is thinnest and where there usually isn't any reactive armor. And so this little switchblade thing that can be used by one man, and the man doesn't have to stay there. I mean, the drone is self-navigate, so you don't have to keep a laser beam on it or anything like that. The guy can just shoot and scoot, you know? And so
shoot and scoot, I like
the
that.
Ability
that
to do this, you know, by an individual foot soldier, you know, with this high-tech kind of a weapon, is a revolution in military affairs that could really change the battlefield of the future, because
it means
that tanks might be obsolete.
Yeah,
you know,
the Stinger changed Afghanistan, didn't it? When the Russians were in Afghanistan, didn't the Stinger missile turn their Hind, you know, helicopter battleships into, you know, junk metal?
It did. I think the real turning point was during the little-known Nagorno-Karabakh War. And
right.
I was the first one to write an article about that. You know, we had a show about this, you know, where the Azeris went up against the Armenians. And they'd been fighting for 30 years. Neither side had been able to get the upper hand. But Turkey came in, and Israel sold the Azeris the technologies like this, these flying killer robots, call them what you will. There's a wide variety of them. And for the first time in history, it was the first time in history that you had a manned army defeated by an unmanned air force. You know, it was basically what it came down to. And they were defeated decisively. You know, armored vehicles, all kinds of things. Even sophisticated SAMs, you know, were destroyed, you know, because they can't see these things. They fly too slow and low, and they're made of plastic. And I predicted in that article, you know, that this could be a revolution in military affairs, that the United States itself is global policeman. What was that last line? That the U.S. global policeman could be riding to a rendezvous with Agincourt. And the... a technological revolution. You know, the other thing that's so impressive about these technologies is medium powers, Israel, Turkey, you know, Iran, can make these things, you know, so they don't depend upon the great powers, the superpowers anymore. So you've got a highly effective, you know, ability to have unmanned flying killer robots made by mid-level states who are willing to sell them to anybody, okay? You know, Israel sold its stuff to the Azeris. They, not the Armenians, you know. The Azeris are being backed by the Turks. Turkey is not a friend of Israel.
Which is interesting.
The Azeris are not
Armenian
a friend
genocide.
Of Israel.
Yeah. Well,
you
I'm
know,
get Bianchi
yeah.
here in a second.
You know,
go ahead, Bianchi. I want to get you your question.
You know those robots you're talking about can be circumvented with just putting a canopy over your tanks. Well, here's the thing. You shoot a Roman candle, a bottle rocket at me, at what point in time am I going to shoot a Roman candle at you or even something bigger? Those low-yield tactical weapons, if you shoot a 5 megaton at Russia, Russia is not going to respond with a 5 megaton. It's going to respond with a 40. That's the way that works. I don't think these countries are going to be going tit for tat and tat for tit. They're going to be going to use the ultimate to get it over with. That's why it's very dangerous. I support the deterrence, but when you start using these things the way people are contemplating on using them, I don't think that's going to work very well at all.
Well, Dr. first, on the idea of putting it's amazing how Pianki often anticipates what the Russians, how they think, because they thought that too. One of the things they've been doing to try to protect their vehicles, their tanks, against the Switchblade and these other flying killer robot systems, is by putting a cover. They'll put a grate or piece of metal over the top of the tank and over the engine compartment, okay? And, hoping that will help solve the problem. Unfortunately, for the Russians, it's been trapping the crews when the tank gets attacked because they can't get out, through the it's also been obstructing their ability to use machine guns that are mounted on the turret. But you're right, in the future, when more intelligent design is taken, you can harden up the tank, and I'm absolutely sure that that's what the U.S. Army is arguing, because he gives me an opportunity to mention another thing I read, which is why I wanted to mention this business about this military revolution affairs. What is happening for sure when the Pentagon wants to deny it, and at least the U.S. Army, in the aftermath of all this damage that's been done to Russian armor by these unmanned aerial vehicles, has suddenly started publishing, had a series of articles on how great the Abrams tank is and the tanks of the future and how great they're going to be. I just thought that was curious that the U.S. Army
what makes
would
them
start,
great?
Basically selling current tanks and future tanks, to the Washington audience just when the Russian tanks are getting always we think, oh, it can't happen to us, right? No, this would be our tanks are just as vulnerable to this kind of an attack. And it makes me think that the battlefield, we could be seeing the death of the tank, as at least as the most important piece on the battlefield of the future.
We just heard something last week on
this.
We just heard hold on just a second. Captain Tom Stewart was on last week on our doctor panel talking about the Marines have decommissioned or got rid of like 10 tank divisions. They're doing it right now. Do you know anything about that?
I do know about that, and maybe the person who's doing that is a genius, but I doubt it. Okay, it's probably being done to save money. It's probably being done to save money, but it just might by accident, be the right thing to do.
That's usually
how people
do things correctly by accident. So yeah, that's interesting.
Right.
Okay. Well,
it could.
Look at the weapons.
The other thing I wanted to comment on the Pianki comment is, he's his idea that the Russians, that you're not going to be able to limit things to a tactical nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
I won't express an opinion on that. I think it depends on the scenario. However, in the Russian General Staff Academy, the classic Russian work called Soviet Military Strategy, published 6 months before the Cuban Missile Crisis by Marshal Sokolovsky, who was their leading thinker, and he would absolutely agree with Pianki. And I'm there is definitely a faction on the Russian General Staff who thinks that way and would say, hey, if you're going to start using nuclear weapons, don't go small. It's going to escalate, so you might as well go all the way. And that's why we, you know, the focus of the discussion, as we talked in a previous show, that, well, if the Russians use tactical nuclear weapons, it's going to be limited use of tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And there's definitely a faction that supports that, a modern faction that believes that the West is so terrified of nuclear weapons that any limited nuclear use is going to drive us out of the war and they will prevail. And I think they're right about that too, okay? You know, but there's definitely going to be those, you know, who say, you know, we've built up the capability. Why take the risk? Why take the chance that they will get a strategic strike in on us? And if you're going to fight a tactical nuclear war, at least go big with the tactical nuclear weapons and take out all the U.S. and NATO tactical nuclear weapons. There aren't that many of them, you know. They're a handful of bunkers, easy to target, you know. And then there are going to be others to say, go all the way. You know, I have the big one, you know, big counterforce, first strike that will be the final solution to the problem of the U.S. and NATO. So there are definitely Russian hawks, nuclear hawks on the general staff that would agree completely with what Pianki just said. And that is very worrisome. We should be very worried about that. And not 90% of the discussion is about the idea of, well, what do we do if there's some limited tactical nuclear use? And even response to that, as I said earlier, you know, the Biden administration's and its advisors, basically, their solution amounts to surrendering. Because that's what it is. When you,
well, they've already done that.
In response to an adversary,
did that in Afghanistan.
Use of the nuclear weapons, you're just going to complain about it. You're going to exercise, put economic sanctions. Let's face it. You know, I mean, that's just trying to make it look like you're doing something. And what it really amounts to is a surrender.
Can drones carry tactical nuclear weapons?
If they're big enough, yeah, they can.
Okay.
They can. You know, so you could have a drone carry. But the Russians like missiles, you know, cruise missiles. Cruise missiles are almost like drones. You know, they're the slick 'em in. I mean, one could argue it was a drone. I mean, it's it's got terrain, TERCOM in it. You know, so that it can recognize terrain and evade air defenses, fly under air defenses, and recognize a target, can recognize a target, so it would be able to basically have an almost zero CEP, almost pinpoint accuracy. So it could use a very low-yield weapon, you know, to take out a missile silo. That's another criticism. This is an article I haven't published yet, but one of the things I'm going to argue is that while the Biden administration doesn't believe in the slick-em end because they don't believe in nuclear war fighting, and so they want to ignore all the military capabilities of something like the slick-em end, which the Pentagon wants. Biden's own military, his own Pentagon, has turned against him on this and doesn't support him. Nonetheless, he won't listen to them, and he's defended it. But they haven't tried to make the argument from the arms control perspective. And that's what the Biden administration does believe. They love arms control, even though the Russians and the Chinese and everybody, all these authoritarian powers, the totalitarian powers, violate every arms control treaty. That's what they want to do, you know, arms control. And Reagan knew, you know, that you can't get something for nothing in arms control. You know, that's what the first arms control treaty, and one that was regarded for its time as the most successful arms control treaty in history, was the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or the INF Treaty, because the Russians were deploying these SS-20 intermediate range ballistic missiles at the rate of one a week to threaten the destruction of European NATO. And Reagan countered that by deploying our Pershing II and ground-launched cruise missiles, our intermediate range ballistic missiles. We didn't have any missiles in that category until Reagan deployed them. And he did it so that he could negotiate the elimination of this whole class of missiles, which he achieved. You know, you can't trade something for nothing. We gave up the P-2s and the Glickums, and the Russians gave up the SS-20s. Now, later, they cheated on the INF Treaty, which is why President Trump withdrew from it. And they have been cheating on it for many years. The State Department just didn't want to admit it. But at least initially, it got rid of the SS-20s, and under Reagan's watch, Bush's watch, the first George Bush, you know, it was successful in that. And so that's why, you know, if the Biden administration doesn't want to deploy the SLCA man for military capability, it should at least do it for arms control purposes. You know, we could move those SLCA men's. Not only could they provide potentially assurance to the South Koreans, you know, but they could pose a threat, a stealthy, highly accurate threat against those new ICBM silos that the Chinese are building, those 300 silos. You know, it could be a functional equivalent of the hypersonic warhead threat that Russia and China are way ahead of us on. You know, we haven't been able to develop a successful hypersonic warhead yet. But maybe we wouldn't have to, you know, if we deployed SLCM N and said, you know, look, we don't have hypersonic warheads, but we can do a short warning, stealthy first strike against your capabilities with this, with the SLCM N, with this lower technology. You know, how about trading your advantage in hypersonic warheads? You stop working on hypersonic warheads, building up that threat to us, and we'll pull the SLCM N's back.
Well, just even if they agree to it, they're not going to do it. They're still going to. I mean, research goes on all the time. This is why
to
curb research.
But I'm trying
to
trick the Biden administration into blowing the SLCM N. And the only carrot I can think of is their belief in arms control. But you're right, because they would definitely cheat on it.
They'd do it anyway.
If they're so far ahead, they might not even agree to it.
Yeah.
But going
ask a couple questions.
I got a question.
Go ahead, Bianchi. Then I got a couple of questions before we only have a few minutes left.
I got a question to you.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
See, all our scenarios is as if these wars is going to be fought in Europe, just like Desert Storm, Afghanistan, Iraq. Your next conflict with Russia, when it gets down to that point, it's going to be U.S. cities. They're going to take out population centers. Then you're going to have all sort of chaos, disarray here within your population, and they're going to be the ones that say, hey, stop this stuff. I don't like this. My homeowner's insurance, State Farm, and Allstate are not going to pay for these windows during the time of war.
But what are they going to do with our country if they bomb it? I'm looking at it from a coldly logical point of view. You know, the reason that you attack other countries is to gain something, either resources, control, the land itself, whatever. I mean, who's going to hold our country? It's not going to be easy to do that here. So I don't see the advantage in attacking U.S. cities. Dr. Pry?
I agree with you from a strategic point of view, Greg, and almost all U.S. nuclear strategists also take that conclusion. We've talked about it before on the show in the sense that they need those cities to hold them hostage, you know, in order to get us to surrender. However, I have to admit there's some doubt in my mind about this, okay?
Yeah.
When you look at how the Russian history about how they wage war, we're also surprised by their inhumanity in Ukraine, okay? Or at least the alleged inhumanity. I'm not sure how much we can trust those reports. But if they are true, they do fit in with the Russian way of war, which is total war, you know, where they do kill the civilian population and not just from the period of the Mongols or Peter the Great versus the Swedes and all that. A real interesting book to read is John Tolan's The Last 100 Days. I'm reading it now, rereading it, about how the Russian army behaved during the last 100 days of World War II when they were moving in on Berlin.
Oh, horrible.
And the rapes, the murders, the single greatest, you know, something killing, you know, 5 million German civilians killed really for no good military reason, just to take revenge, just for terror. You know, women raped and crucified, literally nailed to barns and houses after they were raped. Just horrific kinds of behavior. This was in 1945. That's not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, when you get in a war with the Russians, it's like getting in a war with Genghis Khan, you know. Pianchi might be right about that. And all of us strategists who say, oh, they won't attack the cities, maybe we're wrong. That's one of the things.
Well, I
don't
say they won't.
About.
I'm just trying to look at it from a coldly logical, you know, point of view as to why to do it. So, I mean, they want to be able to survive the war.
You
they
know,
want to be able to trade. They want to have us buy their stuff. You know, so yeah.
They,
or maybe
they
also,
don't want
or maybe
you,
they
don't necessarily need you to buy their stuff. You want them to buy your stuff. What they're going to do is take out. They're going after people. Russia's been into some horrific circumstances throughout their history, even that which I've been able to study. They are hardened. They are war-hardened, and they don't want to see that. They know what the ultimate is. So they're going to go after your cities. We plan these things as if the battleground is going to be in on European territory someplace. No, your battleground is going to be in your Los Angeles, your Atlanta, Georgia, your New York, your St. Louis. That's what's going to happen.
But are we natural enemies, though? You know, and we talk about this all the, you know, I don't think we've talked about this enough, actually, that, I mean, Russia and the United States have never been to war. We've had a Cold War. But you look at the countries we've been in war at, you know, Germany, Japan, you know, and go back, you know, World War One and Spain, the Spanish-American War, and Mexico. The wars in the British, you know, in the 1812.
Let me ask you a question, Greg. Let me ask you a question, Greg.
Sure.
Does the Democratic Party think that you and me and Pianki and people who think like us, does the Democratic Party think that we are their natural enemies?
Oh, absolutely. I think they think freedom is their natural
enemy.
I think they think Americans are their natural enemy. Yeah.
Totalitarian states are even worse than the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party may well catch up with them, and it seems to be moving in that direction. But that's how totalitarian states think. They think that everybody that is outside their control, they don't even believe in real friends and allies. You have temporary alliances that serve your interests, just the way gangster gangs might have temporary alliances. But ultimately, everybody is your natural enemy. If you don't control them, if they're not subject to you, you know, to your total control, they are a natural enemy that needs to be destroyed or conquered. And that's how they think. So, but anyway, before I'm run out of time completely, since we were talking about, you know, what's going on with Russia on the ropes, if Russia is on the ropes, we don't know for sure they are. But let's assume for a moment that the mainstream reporting is all correct. Before we left the show, there's just an amazing parallel in history over the Ukraine war. And that's the 1940 Winter War between Russia and Finland. It happened in 1939, 1940. After the Nazis and the Soviets ganged up on Poland, Stalin went to try to conquer Finland. And he had a huge superiority over the Finns. Everybody thought that that the Finns would be rolled over, you know, by the Russian tanks and very quickly defeated. But the Russians had, the Finns, Baron Karl Mannerheim on their side, who was a military genius. And not only that, but he knew how the Russian general staff thought, because he had served in the Tsar's general staff, and he had led the whites against the communists, so he had experience fighting them. And his brilliant management of the resources of Finland, ultimately he lost the Winter War, you know, but Finns to this day regard him as the greatest Finn in history, you know, because he damaged the Russians. The Russians took disproportionate losses, and they didn't in the end conquer all of Finland. You know, they managed to take off pieces of it. So Stalin, he basically did defeat Stalin's master plan, which was to swallow all of Finland. And they had to be content just taking chunks of the territory. But this, too, could be what's happening in Ukraine. You know, history yesterday, June 13th, was the anniversary of the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC. There are Alexander the Greats that come up in history, single individual brilliant men, and nobody seems to be thinking that one of the reasons Ukraine might be doing so well is there may be an unnamed military genius, their version of Robert E. Lee, their version of the Baron Karl Mannerheim, who is conducting their excellent defensive actions. I mean, ultimately, I think they're doomed to defeat in the press of numbers, but maybe not. Maybe it won't be the complete defeat that that Putin had anticipated. But this is another possible factor, not just the technological factor. But I find it interesting that, you know, we don't know who is leading. All we hear about is Zelensky. You know, we don't hear about who's leading these military forces and doing these counterpunches and stuff.
So I didn't know where they are.
A really good job on the Ukrainian side, you know.
We don't have a battle map to see where they are. Yeah, yeah.
And just like Mannerheim.
The same question.
Mannerheim,
same question,
you,
go, who's leading Biden's?
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, but Mannerheim knew how the Russians thought. He knew their tactics. You know, he had had led their troops at one time when he was on the Russian general staff. And so the parallels are striking. And the other thing that's striking and dangerous about it,
mm-hmm,
is that it was because the Soviets did so badly against Mannerheim in the Finnish War, Hitler thought that Stalin and his and the Red Armies would be a pushover. You know, look,
well,
they couldn't even defeat the Finns.
Yeah,
they couldn't even defeat the Finns. And that was one of the main things that led him to launch Operation Barbarossa. I wonder if we're making the same mistake here in the West over the Ukraine war. You know, because you hear such derision about Russian military capabilities and, you know, and
best to keep
so
the
many
war
voices
going.
Like Lindsey Graham. Let's get in there. Let's get in there and, you know, and complete the victory. You know, history is complicated. These things are complicated. And the possibility of making a miscalculation that results in a disaster for the West is very high, especially with a nuclear-armed power. So, anyway, those are my thoughts for this edition of our National Security Report.
I appreciate it. I actually, as you know, I love to get people who would ordinarily never talk to each other together. Cheryl Todd's on the line. She runs Gun Free Radio. She's my guest in the next hour. So I want to give this opportunity, especially Peter, if you have a couple more minutes. Cheryl, we've been talking about the Ukraine war. This is a chance to talk to somebody that knows nuclear weapons, EMP, and all kinds of things like that. I know you're unprepared for this because we didn't talk about it before you came on, but do you have any questions for Dr. Pry from the short time that you've been listening?
Well, hello and good morning, and I apologize about getting over a little bit of laryngitis, but hopefully my voice is coming through okay.
No, you sound fine.
And that couple of sentences that I was privy to just as I was signing on, fascinating. I will go back and listen to this segment, but when you, I believe you said EMP, and that is something that, you know, over the last few years has kind of been on, I think, more people's minds than what we realize, and, you know, thinking about our power grids and that sort of thing. And I just wonder, the first thing that popped in my mind is, how do we prepare for these kinds of things? And is it such a possibility that really we should have that preparedness mindset for these, or is that a little far out there?
I definitely think we should have a preparedness mindset at all, personally, and at all levels of government. You know, people can do things to prepare not just for EMP, but for hurricanes, you know, kinds of natural disasters. Store food, store water, have a medicine kit, and know how to use it. It was just a couple generations ago in my father's generation. They had never heard of EMP, but they had lived through the Great Depression and World War II and the early Cold War, and they were ready for anything. You know, my parents and everybody's parents back in those days were, today we would call them survivalists, but everybody was survivalists from that generation. And somehow in a generation or two, you know, this concept of preparedness and rugged individualism and the value of self-sufficiency and being able to take care of your own family without help from anybody, all of that seems to have gone by the wayside. And so, yeah, I think we can and should prepare at an individual level. I think we should be active in getting state governments. You know, Florida, for example, could harden its electric grid. We know how to do it. It wouldn't cost that much. You know, it would protect against the worst threat. The least likely threat is a nuclear EMP attack, but it's the worst threat. And if you protect it against that worst threat, it will mitigate all the lesser threats. You know, cyber attacks, physical sabotage, even severe weather like hurricanes. You know, if you're hardened to survive and recover from a nuclear EMP, you know, it'll more than pay for itself by the ability to more quickly recover from severe weather like hurricanes. And the federal level, of course, I mean, we already have a White House executive order where we're supposed to be protecting all the critical infrastructures from EMP, and Congress has passed bills, more than one, directing the government to do that. But our government is so dysfunctional and corrupt. All they do is studies, you know, and they have not obeyed the president or the Congress and provided the protection, you know, that that we could achieve at relatively low cost.
I'm telling you, I value everything that you're saying. And not only in a generation or two have we lost sight of the importance of being, you know, the rugged individualist and the prepared minded person, but we're scoffed at for even thinking in those terms, whether it's, you know, at the national level, the state level, or the personal level. You know, I talk about self-defense a lot. My field is the Second Amendment. And there's just this condescension about people who are just trying to, you know, think of worst case scenarios and be prepared for it. And I have no idea. My field of study actually is psychology. You think that I would have a better grasp on that, but I have no idea how we have become so, you know, like so condescending towards people that just want to be self-sufficient. It's odd, don't you think?
Yeah, my own theory is that as we have evolved toward becoming an authoritarian and now moving toward bigger and bigger government that wants more and more control over our lives, the people who want power in Washington, they don't want us to be rugged individualists and think for ourselves. You know, if you go to the Department of Homeland Security website, you know, about how do you prepare for a hurricane, for example, you know, they basically say, don't worry, the government will be there to save you in 72 hours. And people continue to believe that, despite Hurricane Katrina and all these hurricanes, Sandy, where over and over again it's proven that the government isn't able to come to your rescue in 72 hours. You know, I think it's part of the psychology of authoritarianism and totalitarianism that is inherent in government. You know, where they want to be large and in charge and discourage people from thinking independently and being prepared on their own. That's scary to government.
So true.
Cheryl's in Arizona, by the way.
It's scary.
This is fine. Cheryl's in Arizona, so she's in a different state. So they're not going to have the same hurricane problems. They're going to have different problems. I said the power grid is immediately suspect because of the greenies in California. Bianca, you had a question, and let's get to Ryan, and then we'll see.
In those cases, Russians are not going to be your enemy. Your enemy is going to be the people down the street or other side of town that's going to be coming after your cabbage, your corn, garden, your tomatoes. And you see a nation that's trying to disarm you because you're going to need those arms in order to protect what you need to sustain yourself. And another point, people up north is going to start moving down south because it's more climate friendly. You got a lot of folks up north that couldn't provide or sustain themselves or live if it wasn't for grocery stores. If it wasn't for the things of convenience, they would perish.
Are you seeing a lot of people in Arizona, for example, from, I don't know, northern Michigan, Wisconsin, the socialist states?
Are you asking if we have people?
Yeah, Cheryl. Yeah, I'm asking Cheryl. Yeah.
Well, we are kind of a come to kind of a state. So people, we have huge retirement communities here. So we have people from everywhere. We have military base, Luke Air Force Base is just a stone's throw from my house. So there's lots of people that, you know, have experienced Arizona. And even though this time of year, it feels like you're standing on the face of the sun when you walk outside, right? They still come and they want to make this beautiful state their home because we do have, you know, so many different climates. We've got, you know, northern mountains. We've got, you know, the deserts here. We're not that far from Nevada. If people like to go to, you know, Las Vegas, they're not that far from the ocean in California. So it is a state that brings people from everywhere. It's a long answer to your question to say yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you what, Dr. Pry, I think I'll let you go unless you have another comment, but what I think should happen is, Cheryl, you should join us for one of our national security reports. Or even better, if you want to have Dr. Pry on as a guest, I can get you two in contact to have him on Godfrey Radio.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, that's what we do here. We make connections. Dr. Pry, do you have anything else you want to add to this or have an Arizona question?
Oh, I'm already intruding on your guest's hour. But thank you so
not
much for
all.
Having me, and I look forward to talking in the future. And I've got to my commander in chief is sending me to the grocery store anyway. So I've got to leave. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dr.
Bye bye.
You right now.
Take care of yourself, Peter, and be careful.
He's actually fascinating. He's been with us for a couple of years. In fact, during the lockdowns, we spent like an hour and a half because there were no speaking engagements. He routinely does, you know, all these different engagements. He's a former CIA Armed Service Committee in Congress. He actually has a bill on our Write Your Laws website, writeyourlaws.com, about how this a state model EMP program. So I can send that to you. In fact, it's part of our whole package of 26 bills in which I've added to since we added the one where I wrote a constitutional amendment to stop Congress from borrowing money. So it's been we're busy around here, but I just love connecting people who, like I say, who would never normally talk to each other. That's part of the fun of this show. So welcome. I'm going to give you a round of applause here. Let me find my applause real quickly. And a return engagement of Cheryl Tuttle's Gun Free Radio. There we go. Good to have you back.
That's quite fun. Thank you so much for asking me back. And I know that my schedule and yours stay so busy that it's like a miracle that we can find a dot on the calendar that lines up. Thank you for sticking with it.
Oh, hey, listen, it's always good to have you on. And that's why I changed the hours, actually for, you know, because we have Arizona people more than we have Eastern time zone. So that's why I extended it the way I did. You're always welcome on the show. You don't need an invitation. Just call, especially on Fridays. You know, if you want to join Shirley Watchell with her DC project, that'd be a good thing to do also. So tell me, let's get folks about, so they know a bit about more about you. Gun Free Radio and DC project as far as Arizona goes. Let's hear about that.
Absolutely. So our show, and you have to pronounce it right, of course. Like, it's not just Gun Freedom Radio, it's Gun Freedom Radio, right?
So wait a minute, let me try that. Gun Freedom Radio.
Oh, beautiful. You know, last night I was watching Dumbo, the live action Dumbo with my two granddaughters. And
is that a White House briefing or I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Nice. I like what you did there. And the guy that's famous for saying, let's get ready to rumble was, you know, the carny, the carnival guy. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wonder if that's where I started thinking about how to pronounce my show. I have no idea. But when I heard him say it, I was like, oh, huh, that sounds familiar. Anyway, so Gun Freedom Radio is an interview-based show. Mm-hmm. We started several years ago on terrestrial radio. So we've had several different iterations. We were a two-hour show. We were on FM, then we were on AM, then we were on an internet-based network, and now we are a podcast style. Each show runs just under an hour usually, and it's a single guest, so we can really take a deep dive. Haven't had you on yet. We need to get that fixed and have you on.
Happy
and
to.
Oh, I'd love to. And so we talk to subject matter experts on any topic. I mean, we're a self-published show, so I can kind of do what I want. I'm kind of like you, right?
Isn't
so
it great?
We do talk about,
there's a price for your
it
freedom.
It is.
You know, you don't get the marketing that Cumulus or iHeart or Salem would give you. But on the other hand, you don't have all the news breaks, their commercials, and they don't tell you what you can't say. Like Brandon is a fraud. Like we have an insurrection. The insurrection committee meets, you know, now on TV. You know, in fact, you can't say Dr. Fascist, which is what I call Dr. Anthony Fauci. The genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher.
Right. And somehow that gets you canceled, not that guy that you just described.
Exactly.
Fairly accurately.
Yeah. It took me a while to come up with that title. But yeah, but we can say things like that. What do you say? What's outrageous? What's the most outrageous thing you've said of late?
Just guns. I mean, you would be shocked how unnerved people get. Just if I put up a post that has anything about, you know, firearms training, I mean, this is to keep people safe. I get flagged. I get, you know, suppressed. The reach gets suppressed. Every once in a while, you'll get one of those little, you know, this has been fact checked, you know, kind of thing. And it's, I mean,
by somebody with a biased opinion.
Right. This should not be. I mean, guns used to be in every single home, everywhere, because mm-hmm. they are used, as your previous guest was saying, there, somebody weighed in and said, it's to protect your garden, right?
Yes, Bianchi. Bianchi's still with us. Yeah. Bianchi's my co-host.
Bianchi, thank you.
Yeah.
For two-legged, from two-legged and four-legged predators.
Yeah.
And if you're protecting your garden, they're probably not going to stop at your garden, right? So you're protecting your home. You're protecting your very life. And also hunting, putting food on the table for your family. That used mm-hmm. to be mainstay. Like, there was nothing shocking about that. And now suddenly we're all so pearl clutchy, right? Just, oh, my goodness, they said the word gun. And I just don't even know what to do with that information. It's
snowflake.
Bizarre. So that's... Yeah, so that's the most shocking thing. But we have had guests on, I should probably connect you with this person, and we talk about the January 6th incident and how it's there's a strong FBI.
Covered that. We have people there who are calling in from the Capitol. We've got all kinds of stuff on that. We even had, if we can do it again, Jonathan Mosley, who's our legal reporter, has been a little bit busy lately, but he got Stuart Rhodes from the federal prison in Oklahoma, called his phone, and then Jonathan put it on conference. So we've got a recording of Stuart Rhodes calling us directly from prison. He's the founder of the Oath Keepers. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's amazing thing.
So,
go ahead. Because I got a question right away.
Say,
I got a big question.
Yeah, Paloma A. Capanna is the lady that I've been chatting with. And if you don't know her, I would love to connect you with her, because she's a civil rights lawyer. And so she looks at this whole thing through language, right? The language that's being used, the charges that are being levied, and how they don't make any sense. And anyway, she's awesome, and I will connect you with her. But what
I want to get her a bill. We have a bill that makes gun owners a civil right. Gun ownership a civil right.
Yeah.
And the whole point of that is to put teeth into the Second Amendment. Yeah, I want to talk about that in a minute. But you mentioned you have a background in psychology, so let me kind of explore that for a little bit. Why do you think people are afraid to defend themselves? Why are they – what is it – have guns been so demonized that, you know, people think they're just going to leap up and shoot themselves, you know, that they're going to go on automatic? You know, what is it – what happened to our culture, you know, that all of a sudden we went from – you know, every Hollywood movie had guns in it, which never need reloading, by the way, to the point where Americans, you know, even mentioning the word, oh, no, you can't even talk about that. I mean, that's the environment I grew up with in my family, but, you know, I got away from that, obviously. But where'd it come from? Why are people so scared? Is it part of the mass psychosis? What do you think?
And maybe the mass psychosis helps explain it. I really don't have the answer. I wish that I did. But it is, I mean, until we came up with this COVID craziness, can we say the word COVID on your show, or does that get us canceled?
No, we definitely say it on the show, but we call it the government COVID hoax, you know, the mass genocide for a marketing campaign. That's what we talk about COVID.
Yeah. So until we came up with that craziness, there was never a time that I knew of, that I had read about in the United States, where it was encouraged to have a phobic response to something. So, like, let's say I was afraid to fly. There was nobody else out there, you know, like forming whole marketing campaigns and, you know, getting all your friends gathered together to say, yes, you should definitely be afraid to fly. That is do you know you're in this metal tube and you're hurtling through the skies and, you know, there's only a couple of little rubber wheels below you, you know, these kinds of things. This would never happen. But when it comes to guns, we are encouraged to share that phobic response. And there's actually a word for it called hoplophobe. Hoplophobia.
Yep, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as catchy as gunphobe. I say gunphobe because people can really latch onto it. Are you a gunphobe? You know, if you have a pathological need to control people, then you're a gunphobe. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really know why. I mean, I think that your other guest nailed it, that the idea of being a prepared-minded, rugged individualist and having an authoritarian and a totalitarian government, those ideas are completely at odds with each other. And it behooves the person that wants you to be a little baby bird in your life, just sitting there with your mouth open and peeping for your next meal, it behooves them for you to not realize that you have grown wings and you could leave that nest and soar, right? So I think that's got to be where the seeds are planted and fertilized. There's a good vision, right?
No, it makes perfect sense. It sounds like psychological warfare to me. I want to see if Pianki has it. Pianki, what do you think of this? That this really is a psychological warfare as part of a globalist agenda to disarm people both mentally as well as physically. See if he's there or he's listening. He's making coffee. See, the folks here mute themselves when they're not. They mute themselves when they're not talking, so we don't get background noise, which works out really well. Well, let me ask you that question: do you think there's a psychological warfare that's just as much a part of the globalist agenda to disarm us mentally as disarm us physically? I mean, it seems to make sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, really does tie back to what your previous guest was saying. These things are at odds with each other. So then, what do we do about it? Well, we create, you know, a psychological warfare campaign that attacked from multiple. I mean, we even have people standing at the pulpit saying somehow guns are bad and protecting your one and only life are bad, and they're using the Bible. I think that is bigger and stronger, and I think this is okay on your show, than psychological warfare. There is a spiritual battle. There is spiritual warfare at play like I have never experienced. It's almost palpable. You can almost feel it in the air around you, the spiritual warfare. And, you know, I think that it just comes from there. And if you aren't armed up in, you know, with the full armor of God, and you aren't armed up with scripture and active prayer life, then you're just going to fall for whatever, because what is your foundation?
No, and first of all, you can say anything on this show. You know, I mean, obviously not advocating violence against others and things like that. But as far as controversy goes, yes, you would love our Oh My God report with Wendy Arthur, who's a minister who loves scripture and hates churches and religions. You know, so you'd fit right in. You fit right in with a lot of our reports, actually. But as far as spiritual, you're absolutely right. That and one thing that I find very interesting too, and we have our doctor panel on Thursdays. We have doctors Mikovits, Artis, Thorpe, Marble. We have John Cullen, the data guy that created the Johns Hopkins COVID map. We have other folks. I'm trying to get Dr. Mark McDonald. Hopefully he'll join us. We have this incredible doctor panel, all right? The greatest doctors in terms of COVID freedom, of getting people out of the psychology, you know, of masks, vaccines, mandates, things like that. The one thing they all have in common is a strong belief in God. And it makes sense because, you know, unless you have a belief in God and a higher power or a creator or whatever you conceive, then you think that government is the highest power. And if government is the highest power, you end up worshiping government. And the worship of government is far greater evil than the love of money, because that leads to mass, you know, genocide. And so the greatest threat to government, if you're one of these folks like Dr. Fascist, is people that don't worship you but actually believe in God, and that our rights are we are born with our rights. Government can't touch them. Right. Our rights are, and I wrote an Australian Bill of Rights with a woman down there named Jen Clark, and we discuss a lot of these things. You know, that rights are absolute, that rights are separate from government, that there's no connection between rights and government. You know, that we are born with these rights, you know, from our Creator. So the government can't touch certain things. And the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, you know, especially the Second Amendment, in terms of the reason the government can't touch our rights to own and carry firearms, is because that right is absolute. That right came from God. It's inherently in us. You cannot separate us from our rights. It is our birthright. They are as intrinsic to us as any part of our body. You know, our body, mind, and soul are directly connected to our rights. It's all one thing. And until people understand that, that's how strong rights are. And this is why government can't touch them. And any legitimate government that gets its consent from the government would understand that. A government that doesn't think they get their consent from the government, they think they have to rule. I despise the expression, the rule of law. I am not ruled by law. Laws are here for our freedom. Laws are created to protect us from, usually, government. I'm not under the rule of law. you know, I have rights, you know, as a person, as part of my birthright. And this is how I see it. And if we talk about things in these terms, that that government is separate from us, rights are separate from government. You want to talk about a wall of separation? It's not between church and state. It's between people, mm-hmm. our rights, and government. That's where the separation is. I think we should start talking about it. Cheryl?
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And, you know, I think we have such a hard time these days. And I think it goes back to the psychological warfare that I think is fueled by the spiritual warfare. Is mm-hmm. the, you know, we are instructed by Paul in the Bible, right, to obey our government. Well, obeying government is not the same as worshiping government, right? And mm-hmm. then you can take that a step further. And when we are, maybe we've got, let's just say a candidate, or, you know, if the person that's in office, is there somebody that we, you know, mostly agree with the way that they're doing things and we feel like they are truly representing us.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one side that, you know, says, yeah, this person's doing their job well, right? Like me with my staff at our auction house, we have an auction house, and I appreciate their work. I praise their work. I'm happy for their work. There's no hero worship there, right? I'm not in a cult with them. And taking it back to the candidates and the people in office, there's the other side. And it's terrible that we have sides, right? We have one constitution. It's crazy how divided we've become trying to live out that one document. But the other side, they do. It's like if they like their person, it's mm-hmm. like, honestly, it's like worship. And they protect them with every ounce of their being instead of saying, hey, I like how you did this thing, but that thing over there, no, that's not great. We're going to have to work on that. And if we treated our elected officials more like they were representing us, which is the way it was set up to be, more like people who have employees and staff members and how you have to instruct them to run your business, I think we'd be a lot more healthy as a nation. But we've definitely become, you know, this hero-worshipping cult-like entity.
Well, the Democrat Party is a cult. The deep state is a cult that wants to be worshipped.
By leading
Pianchi,
and you'll see.
Pianchi, you want to get on
that? Especially when your heroes are known, notorious criminals. And also, when you start seeing the recognition of same-sex marriage, that should have raised the eyebrow and put you in the alert and get-ready mode.
Well, that raises a question on the Supreme Court in general. Cheryl, if you have a comment on that, I just thought of a question on the Supreme Court we should talk about.
Well, my only comment on that really is, why is the government sanctioning marriage anyway, right? That should be a spiritual institution. So I am just kind of like, you know, that points to a bigger control issue, a big government issue. I just don't know why they're the ones that are giving us permission to get married or not get married. And that's my only comment on that.
Only
you're absolutely right.
Contract? Yeah, I think the only reason that this came under government is it's a contract between two people, and I think it's more for divorce than for marriage, you know, and that those become legal proceedings. It's unfortunate, but you know, if you want to work on a marriage freedom from government bill, that might be really interesting. You know, we can cover all kinds of different areas. The question I have for you on the Supreme Court is that you want to talk about hero worship, you want to talk about a cult, you know, Roe v. Wade. Has no legal basis whatsoever. The court has no authority to make policies, laws, regulations, or anything. No state was ever bound by Roe v. Wade, and yet they all complied with it.
Yeah.
So look at the gun thing. So the Heller decision, everybody goes, oh, Antonin Scalia, greatest justice that ever lived. Well, I completely disagree with them on Heller. There are no reasonable restrictions on the Second Amendment. I just sent out a press release on this. There are no compelling state interests. You cannot take court decisions and court opinions and court procedures which are subordinate to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Second Amendment, and say these things can then rule over the Second Amendment. That is automatically unconstitutional. This is the whole basis of the press release I just sent out, to give people arguments that they're not making right now. But so where you stand on this. You know, does it make sense? The division between statutory law, court opinion and decision, and the Constitution being supreme, making all these other things that they're trying to do automatically unconstitutional.
Well, I guess, again, I take kind of a global position on that, and I say, why are we allowing all of these huge major decisions to be made in the courts? I mean, the reason we're doing that is because we have been asleep at the wheel. We, the people, have been asleep at the wheel for too long and pushing our responsibility off onto, you know, some representative, and then they end up shoving it uphill to supposedly uphill, right, to the Congress, and then Congress shoves it uphill to the president, and the president now has way more power than they were ever that office was ever supposed to have. And then when we're all down here at the bottom of the hill going, wait a minute, first of all, why are we and how are we at the bottom of the hill? Because government was created to be the opposite. We've become inverted. But we are looking for this impartial, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. We only wish. Mm-hmm. Impartial body to say, all right, you know, like two kids squabbling. Well, I want the cookie, and the other kids, I want the cookie, right? And then, you know, this impartial body would be able to say, well, let's take a look at what's happened previously, and, you know, so on and so forth, and what was originally intended when when the offer was made for the cookie. I mean, you know what I mean? And we don't we really don't have that body that is totally impartial. And so the whole thing has gotten mucked up, and it's not functioning the way that it was originally designed. And so it is a broken system. And so now we're expecting this body to say what should happen with this law that shouldn't have been a law in the first place. And really, all I've heard is that they're saying, look, that's what the states were designed to do. That's all we're really saying here. And people are literally trying to murder Supreme Court justices over that.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
What the heck, people? Bring it down a notch.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question on that, because you talk about the original intent of the Supreme Court. The original intent of the Supreme Court was to settle disputes between parties, whether it's people in states, states and people, international things, stuff like that. What it was not intended to do was have the power of judicial review. We actually have a bill, and I haven't talked. This is off our I sent you all a list of our gun bills, just in case we got to those today, which might be kind of fun. But one of the ones that I find most interesting, and I wrote this a couple of years ago, changes. I'm looking for it right now. Changes gets rid of judicial review. That was something brought in by the Marbury versus Madison case, which again, it was a completely illegal action of the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court gave themselves a power. And the one thing you know about constitutional law and the Constitution and the delegation of powers from the states to the federal government through the Constitution is that no government entity in the federal government, or any government really, under ourselves, but particularly no federal government entity under the Constitution can make up its own power. So the idea of judicial review itself is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
You guys ever talked about that?
No, but I love that conversation, and that is probably a good place for us to start when you come on my show and start unpacking that. I mean, I've heard the idea. I've read a few articles. I don't agree with what you're saying, but I'm not as well versed in it clearly as you, which is exactly why I have guests on, right? Because I'm sitting there asking you questions on behalf of my audience, you know, not because I'm there learning, right? But truly, it's...
Oh, I learn too. That's why I do this. This is my classroom.
Exactly.
This is
exactly.
It's great.
Fascinating.
I'm going to send you the bill while Bianchi's asking a question. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Please.
That's, you know, you're absolutely right. The Supreme Court or any court's job, judge, is to settle disputes. But also, that was the whole thing around the issue with the ballots and electoral ballots. You had controversy that existed between states that was not handled properly. That's why come those ballots should have been sent back to those states, where the legislative body of those states could have worked out those controversies and not to proceed the way Pence did with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question for you, because you're in Arizona. You're a battleground state. You know, your state legislature put forward Trump electors as the legitimate ones. You know, you have the audit. Mm-hmm. I mean, how come Arizona
Biden
hasn't
electors.
Decertified?
Biden electors.
Yeah. Well, how come they haven't decertified the Brandon electors and put forward the Trump ones as the only legitimate ones and changed the electoral balance?
You know what? If I had the answer to that, this has been the most revealing. Let me just leave it as revealing. Like, I want to say this has been the
You're
most
so
head-scratching, right?
Yeah, okay.
But I think this has been the most revealing few years that I've ever lived through to see how people behave behind closed doors when they think there's no way it's ever going to come to light. And we have plenty of people that have the big red R Republican blazoned on their chest and their capes waving in the background that have done everything possible to subvert just the whole idea of, you know, that there could possibly be any fraud in any election. You know, like, come on. That right there tells you somebody's, you know, in denial or lying. Any possible opportunity to shine a light and go, well, let's just look, right? Let's just see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the walls go up and then the daggers come out. And, I mean, that is very revealing to
me.
Well,
that's a confession. That's what we call a confession.
That's what I think.
They object that much. You know, it's like when you accuse an innocent person, they'll say, no, I didn't do that. And I was over here. And they'll calmly say, no, I couldn't have, but I didn't do that. The guilty person says, how dare you accuse me? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
What kind of sick person are you? I mean, that's the difference. It's so plainly obvious. It's, you know, you're a psychologist. You know this stuff.
Well, and it's the same. It kind of goes back to where we started with this conversation that, you know, mm-hmm. now you are mocked if you say, you know, I just don't feel like things were right with the election. And the response
we're
is
a lot stronger than that.
Eye roll, like, oh my gosh, here we go again. And they jump to, well, it's not like you could put Trump in anyway, so it doesn't matter. And it's like, wait a minute. First of all, you're the one that said that, not me. I'm not even necessarily saying that there's a remedy of that nature. Let's just reel it way back and just go, if there is fraud, and it's more than just, you know, the occasional thing here and there, which I believe we are finding in spades, that there's way more than just a thing here and there, then let's make sure it can't happen again. What's wrong with that? And the fact that people are so resistant to just doing that, again, it's revealing to me. Like, why would you, if you knew you were playing Monopoly and your opponent was cheating, right? Wouldn't you want to try to figure out how they're cheating so that you can catch them at it the next time and head it off? No, you're just going to sit there and just keep, you know, losing every single time?
Yeah.
Why? That doesn't even stand to reason.
No, you're absolutely right. But I also take a different step, too, that I consider disqualification as the only legitimate remedy. You know, if someone is cheating in a race, you know, even if they come in second or third, you still disqualify them. You know, they didn't win, okay, but they still cheated.
So
in the same way with the
–
go ahead.
I'm not saying that I don't agree with you, but we can't even get there. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Let's just get to, is somebody cheating? If so, how are they cheating? And let's work towards making that, you know, hardening that target, so to speak, right? Let's just start there, because it's easier to get people to agree at that level than it is to jump forward and say, all right, and so we're going to, you know, bring back the Stanley Cup and give it to another team, right? We'll save that for later, because that is really where people get locked up and try to move the conversation off to another direction, like, oh, you're just a Trumpian and you're in a cult. And it's like, no. I am just saying, let's find out if there's cheating, and if so, let's stop it. That's all I'm saying.
That is
still gaining so much resistance that it's revealing to me.
Well, see, I like to negotiate from the absolute strongest position. And for me, I would be coming in saying, you know, this was a stolen government. This was a coup. This is what happens in dictatorships. Do you think it would be okay for Trump to steal the government? And let's put it on, you know, if everybody hates Trump, they say, well, would it be okay for him to steal the, well, no, of course not. Okay. Well, then why is it okay for the deep state and Mike Pence to steal the government? Why is it okay for the government to appoint the government? Why is it okay for the government to choose the government? Look what happens when the government chooses the government. You get wealth and privilege in Washington. You get an entire elite society. You get globalists and a permanent war class. You have no energy. You have no economy. You have no money. You have absolute inflation, which makes the bankers happy so that you have to borrow more money. The price, the currency keeps getting devalued, you know, which helps China. You know, and so all these things are going on that you didn't vote for. You know, your vote was taken. Your vote is meaningless.
But in the psychological warfare that's going on.
Right.
They, for the 4 years that Trump was in, they accused, they said he was illegitimate, right? They already baked that into the cake. So, you know, if you say, would you like it if Trump stole an election? Well, that right there, that derails your conversation because he did. He's
good
illegitimate,
point.
Right? So, but keep your energy because there is an audience for your energy. On our show, on Gun Freedom Radio, when we talk about
I got to say that right.
We try to think in terms of reaching people who are in the middle space, pegged out in one direction or the other direction. They are still curious minded. And how can I appeal to them the best? And so where you are, let's start from the strongest point, and I applaud that. Please do that. I generally try to start from where could we all agree? Let's take it right there.
Yeah, I'm not a consensus like builder. I'm moving the bar. Well, we've got about 18 minutes left, so I want to talk about I'm thinking of an idea for you. You don't need me on the show to introduce our legislation. You can read a bill, talk about a bill, even if you disagree with it, but it'd be interesting to see what your audience thinks of where, you know, some of our not quite as strong positions, like the background check, tax credits and tax deductions for purchasing guns and ammunition, especially for folks that might be lower income, so they can access their civil rights, things like that. There's all these different things that would, you know, very moderate positions, you know, silencers, so you don't have to go deaf, you know, when you're defending your life. Why do you have to make the choice between your hearing and your life? You know, these are just really basic nuts and bolts things I think people would really get. Looks like, I think I got Mama B on the line. I'm going to bring her on in just a second. But those are the kind of things that would be, I think, an easy consensus. Why would you block people from having their you know, access to firearms? Because they don't have enough money to exercise the Second Amendment. That seems to be a no-brainer to me, but, you know, maybe the audience is different. What do you think, just on those basic bills?
No, I do like that. As a matter of fact, someone here in Arizona, I wish I could remember which representative, ran a similar bill in that rather than it being a tax credit, it would just be, this would be a non-taxable item. Firearms and ammunition would be non-taxable. And that was exactly when I went and testified at the state legislature. You know, I said, you know, on any normal year, right, hard enough to make your money stretch. But right now we're facing skyrocketing inflation. Mm-hmm. And so there are other life-saving tools out there that are non-taxable that we've agreed are non-taxable. And so let's just put these in there as well.
Yeah. I got Mama B. I want to go to her quickly, just in case she is at a convention now or something. Do you know Mama B. Thomas? She's our Monday morning co-host. Mama B., you're on with Cheryl Todd, who does Gun Freedom Radio in Arizona. I'll get it.
Hello, darling. How are you?
Very well, like Mama B.
And I like what you do when you for the people and the amendment. And what we are fighting for, and all of those good things that you are doing, God hats off to you, and God bless you. I just like to know why all the time that people does not think logical with their head, and always thinking that when someone get killed by a gun, that individual have to pick that gun up and shoot it. It's not the gun fault. It's the individual that's doing the shooting. And I just like to ask a question. Do you have in your state a lot of gun violence there?
Actually, Arizona has what we call constitutional carry. And more states, I believe Florida just did constitutional carry.
We want it.
And so, you know, there's no waiting period. You don't have to have any special permission to, carry your firearm, whether you want it open carry or if you want to conceal carry it. And when that bill was being addressed and trying to be passed in our state legislature, it took several years to finally get it to yes and get it to pass. But of course, the argument from the other side is there's going to be blood in the streets, right? Because they thought that, or at least the marketing ploy was, that it was going to somehow, make us the OK Corral every single minute of every single day. But instead, crime rates, violent crime rates, crime with gun rates went down. Now, right this minute, I think with all the border unrest, there's been maybe an uptick of sorts, but it's identifiable, the reasons, the cause. Doesn't keep the other side from using it to beat us with, like a bat. But no, an armed society truly is a polite society, because you just don't know who can defend themselves if you're the bad guy and you want to cause trouble. So I think that there's a direct correlation to, more firearms in the hands of good people, moral people,
invisible
and
firearms.
That's the trouble.
You've got visible firearms. That makes a difference.
Right. That definitely brings crime down, and we've seen it study after study, and I don't understand why people have such a blind spot when they look at the places where there is such strong resistant laws to people being able to freely protect themselves with that tool of self-defense. Washington, D.C., Chicago, Detroit, like all these different places where there's so much crime and so many murders.
You've got the answer right there in Arizona. The crime statistics went down. So this is a crime prevention measure. So the Arizona delegation, your two senators, your representatives should hold a press conference and say, we've got the perfect answer to gun crimes. More guns. We've got constitutional carry. We've got open carry. They should go at full force with absolute conviction and said, look, we know you guys are doing all the wrong thing. All these restrictions you're talking about, you're only going to make it worse. Look at Chicago. Look at exactly the list that Cheryl just had. Okay. You say, look, the answer is very simple. Constitutional carry, visible firearms, and be as open and honest and bold and just be absolutely, have the full conviction of your views. And if the Arizona delegation did that, that would be a major accomplishment.
Well, do you know who one of our senators
Let's take everybody in order. Who wants to go first? Go ahead.
Let me just say this real quick, and I'll give the floor. One of our senators is Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly is married to Gabby Giffords. They are in charge of the Giffords organization, which is one of these vehemently, rapidly anti-gun organizations. So
anti-civil
we're not
rights.
Going to get that.
they're an anti-civil rights organization.
So we're not going to get that press conference right now that you're talking about, but it's mind-blowing. But,
you and I have to do it. We'll get Mama B and Pianchi, and we'll all meet somewhere, and we'll do it.
No doubt. I like it. All right.
Pianchi, go ahead then we'll get to B, and then back to Cheryl. Pianchi?
One of the problems is that it's just like Greg trying to tell me how great a Chevrolet Silverado is, and next day I see him driving down the street with a Ford F-150. If you believe in something, then you got to show people that you believe in it. Second Amendment lovers do not wear that arm on their hips, even if it's just a holster. You got to show people where they become accustomed to it and acclimated to it. And tell the government, hell no, if it's unconstitutional, we are not going to abide by it.
Hmm. I'm a concealed carry holder myself, so so I agree with the concept, but I personally carry concealed.
Would you ever carry openly? And you don't have to admit that now. I'm just curious. It's up to
you.
Yeah,
I personally would not. There are multiple reasons. Partially because, you know, I do have little kids around me all the time, my little grandchildren, and I can teach them, absolutely. But if I'm distracted with them and my firearm is accessible to someone else, right?
Unless you're wearing it.
I don't know. This,
unless you're wearing it with the kids. Unless you're wearing it with the kids in a secure holster, yeah.
Well, that's what
I'm
saying.
Anyway,
I prefer concealed carry.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's get Bea in here. I haven't heard from her for a bit. Bea?
Yeah, and I remember that when I was living in Cleveland, Ohio, my uncle would carry his pistol open in supermarkets and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He was just that little half gun real travel, bow-legged man with cowboy boots on. So
I love it.
But I think, and God knows I don't want to be over my boundaries, but I truly think if those states that are having all these crimes, because the people's already in poverty, I think that the crime would go down if these people had something to defend themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you're just not going to go into the neighborhood and you got a baddie, a bad, and you rooting and taking over. People just afraid of their life and all. You know, you have to really defend yourself. And that's one of the biggest things that people can't comprehend. They holler about, oh, the guns, the guns, the guns. We're going to do this and do that. Some of this stuff is staged and some of this stuff have been playing out. Now, we really think back when President Trump first got into office, there was a shoot-up of 60 people getting killed. And right then and there, they were talking about the gun violence before then. So somebody was pulling the strings with some of this foolishness. But I'm praying that it will come out in the open, whoever behind it. Because what they're doing, they're starting now to mess with people's mind now by targeting the children again.
Yeah.
See, this is not nothing new in society. And then they want to, whatever laws they're trying to put in place, they're going to make the people who's weak-minded and not thinking to run to the poll on it. Because therefore they got you, and once they disarm you, you're not able to take up for yourself. Someone come in and rob you, and they once they rob you and tie you up and sitting at your table to fix them some food, something happened like that in Milton, and you and the person had raped the wife and all this stuff. Now, there was guns in the house. They were fearing for their life. They took their time by arresting this individual, but I had to smoke him, honey, to be smoked, because I'm defending my property, and I'm defending my spouse or whoever is with me or whatever. And this is one of the biggest things that society have got their mind on, because they stuck to the TV and one station tell you one thing and one reporter tells you another. If somebody was armed when that person shot up in Queens, I think it's in New York or something, and the officer came out to defend, but yet and still he got killed defending it. But at least he got hold to the shooter. See, this is what I'm talking about. You got to really protect yourself and be vigilant when you do it. So I'm all about the gun. I'm all about it.
Right.
I'm all about it, honey.
All right. So
you know
funny.
Another thing?
Go ahead.
The goal of what Ms. B have said, the first thing that was done to disarm was to get rid of the father figure out of the home, the authority.
Yeah.
So now you're trying to raise children who's being impacted by peers and influence in society and at least of what you have. Now they don't want, that's what is left, to have the ability to weaponize themselves. You know, not to be speaking against your preference of going concealed, but the Constitution actually concealed, giving someone a permit to go concealed is actually against the Constitution. Because the Constitution said it shall not be infringed, and giving people a license to go concealed, making people prove that they deserve to be able to go concealed, is unconstitutional.
Thank you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. So going to that idea that, you know, somebody is coming at you, they are a threat. And, you know, it's a mortal threat that you're facing. So we just want to, you know, that low bar that I was saying earlier, something that we can all agree on, we all want to protect what we love. Everybody. I don't care how old you are, how young you are, what political stripes you wear, that is the truth. And so if somebody is coming after you or your family and you want to stop the threat, that is what we're doing as responsibly armed citizens. We're not the aggressor, and we're always painted as the aggressor because they want to take the template of, let's say, this horrible, evil murderer that went to the most defenseless among us in this school in Uvalde, Texas. He went there. Why? Because he knew that no one could resist him. There was no one in there that was going to be able to stop whatever it was he had on his mind. And if there had been, then they could have stopped the threat. They would not be the aggressor in this situation. But the other side takes that person that was the aggressor and wants to paint all gun owners in that light, as though the presence of a gun suddenly, magically, you know, it's like this evil talisman that makes us do these actions. That is not the truth. We deny that. We speak back to that. And I am here to say that I think if anybody puts themselves mentally in that room and says, or in that school, and says, I could be the most anti-gun person on the planet. And if that person came in with the obvious intent that they are harming our innocent little babies in their school chairs, tell me I'm not going to wish that I had that tool of self-defense and that I'm not going to use that tool of self-defense to stop that threat. I mean, how could anybody look in the mirror and not say that? That was one of the things I was hoping we were going to get to, is this program that I'm involved in bringing to schools in Arizona called Faster Saves Lives, because time is not your friend in those situations.
Yeah. Well, obviously we need to have you back. There's just too much to talk about this because I think guns, you know, what are you talking about? Just guns? No, there's a psychology. There's a patriotism. There's a self-preservation. There's a spiritual religious aspect. There's all these different things going on. We've only got a couple minutes left. So I want to, in fact, Cheryl, if you want to come back, you know, weekly or just for a few minutes or whatever we can do this to talk about the programs that you're working on, they're critical. I want to leave you both with an idea. In fact, everybody, as an idea I had that would be probably one of the greatest firearms promotion things possible would be for President Trump during his next rally to be wearing a six gun openly carried. You know, and I'm serious about it. I'm absolutely 100% serious about this. And what he does is, you know, he has a cowboy, you know, a Colt Peacemaker, single action revolver in a holster. And he walks out on stage and he says, this is how I support the Second Amendment. He opens his jacket, slowly turns 360 degrees. And everybody sees he's openly carrying a firearm. That would do more for guns and more for people than anything you could possibly imagine, I believe. We got about a minute left. I'm going to give it to Cheryl. But B, go ahead.
No, you can imagine that. But the first thing they'll do, open fire on him, because they would lie and say if he comes out insane and getting ready to shoot up the audience. The media is a dirty dog.
Yeah.
And so you have to think logical and what they love to hear and see and do. So that ain't a good idea for our president.
Okay.
Because once he does that, you know what's else. Okay.
Well, maybe you should do it in a speech from our lawyer or something.
I think it is just like George S. Patton used to wear his on his side. He should wear it. Like I said before, if you stand for something, prove to the people that you are willing to abide by it yourself. If you so gung-ho on making kids eat broccoli and you're eating barbecue chicken, well, put some broccoli on your plate.
Yeah, I got to think about this idea and consider what B was saying. But we got about 10 seconds left. Cheryl, it's all yours. We'll get back to broccoli and chicken next time. This is why I love doing this show.
You know,
Cheryl?
I can't envision Patton without his sidearm, right?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get a mental picture of Trump wearing a sidearm, and I don't know, it just doesn't fit. And I do tend to agree with Mama B in this, that he in no way verbally incited a riot, and yet he got impeached for inciting a riot, right? And inciting insurrection. So,
well, that was a propaganda thing. We should talk about that next time, because the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in was an essential part of the coup, so they could commit the Congress to voting for Brandon while the folks were walking around taking selfies up top. We should talk about that too.
Yeah.
Cheryl, thank you so much. Give a shameless plug for your show, where to find it, and anything else you want. And then the clock's already run out, so we're sort of on borrowed time here. So let's get to your information so people can find you.
Thank you so much again for having me on. This was a lot of fun. Bianchi, Miss Mama B, appreciate you both. So gunfreedomradio.com, click the on-demand tab to listen to every show we've ever had on. Click the guest tab to find photos and bios of all of our subject matter experts. We're also on YouTube until they kick us off. On Gunstreamer, gunstreamer.com is a much more First Amendment-friendly version of YouTube. Check us out there. Please subscribe and hit the notifications. That helps those platforms know that the information we're sharing is valued and valuable. And we have an auction house called Pot of Gold Estate Auctions. It's a estate auction. We sell cars, boats, jewelry, coins, guns, ammo, the whole thing. And I'm also involved in a program called the DC Project, Women Dedicated to Safeguarding the Rights to Keep and Bear Arms. Please check that out. And again, that Faster Saves Lives, that is a program that people have been reaching out from every direction saying, how do we better protect our children? And I would encourage everybody to check that out. It's armed and unarmed staff, not just teachers. And it's also for businesses and churches. And it's also, and this is the key thing, emergency medical procedures so that people aren't just bleeding out waiting for the EMTs to come in, who they can't come in until the police have secured the scene. And if you just take the training and pick and choose those pieces, the emergency and the unarmed response, you are already going to save lives. So it's really not as controversial as people want to try to make it.
Yeah, I'd love to have details on that, but we really have to go. But thank you so much.
I know,
Cheryl. We'll talk soon. And that's okay. Don't be sorry. No, I want to make sure we got that on the podcast. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. And Josie thinks I should promote our fundraising. So if you want to be a sponsor or contribute to Action Radio, it's paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. And now we really have to go. Thank you, everybody. Back tomorrow morning.